The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate please, in the galleries, please rise for a prayer by Reverend Gaulk and remain standing for a Pledge of Allegiance.
From the second chapter of Proverbs, we read, "Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul." Almighty God, we are once again called back to address the needs of the people of Missouri. Grant unto us, O God, all that we need to address these issues. Give to us strength of wills, steadiness of purpose, ability to discern what is needed, wisdom to see what we ought to do, fidelity to complete it, and a willingness to bear the consequences of our decisions. Grant us these things. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please inquire the Secretary if there are communications from the Governor?
There are communications with the Governor, Madam Secretary.
There is a special call for special session.
You going? There is. Senator McColl.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe it has been distributed, and therefore I'd ask the reading be waived and be printed in the journal.
After that, here. Hearing no objections, that will be printed in the journal. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, here. Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, here. Curls, Dixon, here. Igel, here. Emery, Hageman, here. Holzman, here. Hoskins, here. Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Krauss, here. Leibla, here. Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
A quorum being established. The Senate is in session. Senator from Cole.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of resolutions, and I'd ask you recognize me for a resolution.
Senator from Cole. Send the resolution forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the duly convened resolution. It has been distributed.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that the resolution be adopted.
The Senator from Cole moves that the resolution number one be adopted. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The chair is in doubt of the resolutions. Would you care to? Let's try it again. Those in favor of the adopt the resolution. Senator from Buchanan. Stage point.
The clearly state that when the chair is in doubt, there is to be a division of the Senate.
It's been the practice of the Senate that the chair, if he's in doubt of a vote, will give one more shot of the voice vote, and if not, we'll move to a division or to a roll call. So those in favor of adoption of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The chair is still in doubt. There will be a standing division. All senators, take your seat. Those in favor of the resolution, as stated by the Senator from Cole, please stand. Okay, thank you. You may be seated. Those opposed of the resolution, please stand. With the vote of 16 aye, 11 no, the resolution is adopted. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have another resolution. I am sending it forward, and I would move for it. It has been distributed, and I would move for its adoption.
The Senator from Cole has moved for the adoption of Senate Resolution number 2. Senator from Cole.
This resolution is adopting the rules from the 99th General Assembly.
The Senator from Cole has moved the adoption of Senate Resolution number 2. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The resolution is adopted. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the Governor? If so, would you please have them printed in the journal?
Senator from the 8th, 7th, what reason do you rise?
Are we still on the orders of the resolution?
We still are on the order of business resolution. We have not called the calendar.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
I have a resolution.
Send the resolution forward.
I ask that it be read.
Madam Secretary, read the resolution.
Senate Resolution number 4, offered by Senator Holzman. Whereas Missouri public officials, including the governor, should be held to the highest ethical standards, and whereas the Missouri Ethics Commission investigated a complaint against the governor and his candidate committee, hereafter committee, called Greitens for Missouri, and whereas, based upon such investigation, the commission determined that reasonable grounds existed to believe that the governor and his committee committed violations of ethics laws, and whereas the commission alleged that in early 2015, the committee received the benefit of a list of prospective donors for which the committee did not pay and which was not expressly contemplated in any contract executed by the committee. And whereas the donor list came from the Mission Continues, a charity that the governor co-founded, and whereas the committee did not disclose the list as a contribution received on any disclosure report filed during the period in which the committee accepted the list. And whereas it was only after a consent order was issued by the commission that the committee finally filed an amended disclosure report that showed the list as an in-kind contribution with a value of $600, and whereas the committee has still not disclosed the name of the individual who provided the list to the committee, and whereas this failure on the part of the governor and his committee was a violation of Missouri law, specifically Section 130.041.13, RSMO, regarding a failure to report a contribution, and whereas Section 130.058 RSMO provides that the candidate is ultimately responsible for all reporting requirements for the candidate's committee, and whereas, as a result of this violation of law, the Commission issued a consent order in which a fee was imposed against the committee, and whereas it is an untenable situation where the governor of this state is the subject of consent order for unethical behavior, and whereas the definition of a lobbyist under Section 105.470 RSMO is an individual attempting to influence the state executive, state legislative, state judicial, or elected local government officials' actions. And whereas the governor's organization, A New Missouri, led by the governor's senior advisor, clearly and repeatedly meets this statutory definition but refuses to file as a lobbyist or lobbying organization. And whereas, because it's a nonprofit, A New Missouri can accept unlimited contributions and is not required to disclose contributors. And whereas the governor's senior advisor has made public statements admitting to coordinating the activities of Greitens for Missouri, A New Missouri, and the official office of the governor, it is in its performance of official acts an arrangement that at best circumvents current ethics law and most likely constitutes illegal coordination between the governor's office and A New Missouri. And whereas, because the governor's use of a charity that he co-founded as a source of soliciting campaign contributions without being transparent about such activities raises questions that deserve investigation by a co-equal branch of state government. And whereas the coordination between the governor's office and A New Missouri should also be investigated by a co-equal branch of state government. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Missouri Senate 99th General Assembly, Second Extraordinary Session, hereby establish an investigative committee to be comprised of three senators appointed by the President pro tempore of the Senate and two senators appointed by the Senate Minority Leader. And be it further resolved that the committee shall hold such hearings and subpoena such witnesses and documents under the hand of the President pro tempore of the Senate as necessary to investigate any misconduct, crimes, corruption in office, or any offense involving moral turpitude or oppression in office committed by Governor Greitens in connection with his illegal use of a donor list from the mission continues. The failure of the governor's lobbying organization to register as such and the clear coordination of the governor's official office, political campaign, and lobbying organization, and be it further resolved that the committee shall begin work upon adoption of this resolution and may continue its investigation until December 31st, 2018. And be it further resolved that the committee shall, at the conclusion of its investigation, issue a report on its findings to the full Senate and the Missouri House of Representatives and forward such findings to the appropriate state or federal law enforcement agency if needed. Co-sponsors of the resolution are Dixon, Sylvie, Libela, Schaaf, Sifton.
The resolution will be printed in the journal. Do you care to explain your resolution, Senator Seven?
Thank you, Mr. President. We all have ethical standards in this business to follow. The governor is no different. The governor has admitted to the Ethics Commission that they improperly didn't report the Mission Continues list that was used to fundraise, but there was no conclusive proof on where he got it. Either he took it with him when he left, or someone stole it, or it was given to him. Any of the three options are a violation of either C3 status or the law of Missouri, and I am calling on this Senate to form a committee to investigate this unethical behavior and find out exactly how the governor came by the list to raise money to run for his office.
Senator McColl.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire the secretary of their message from the governor? If so, would you have them print it in the journal?
You do have message in the journal. They will be printed in the journal.
Senator from Newton.
President, I move that move the appointments. I don't think it's concerning the letter, be returned to the governor. Copy of the withdrawal letter has been distributed on the desk.
You've heard the motion of the senator from Newton. Does any senator desire to be heard on the motion? Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from Joplin.
Senator from Newton, do you yield to an inquiry of the senator from the 24th?
Yes.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. So I'm sorry. I'm confused about this piece of business. This is, I think you said, to withdraw from consideration these two appointments. Is that right?
That's correct.
I'm confused about why we're doing that during special session.
Because whenever the governor makes appointments and we're in session, if we don't vote on them or give advice and consent, we ask the governor to withdraw the letters just as we did all previous governors, so they'll be allowed to serve. If we don't do that, they'll be barred from serving on any level whatsoever.
So the next, well, who knows when the next opportunity would be, but I'm a little bit confused, but for the fact that there's this special session, and I don't remember any appointments being on the call. I may be wrong about that. But I understand why he would like them to be withdrawn so that they could be considered later, and I'm sure that they must be fine, looks like both gentlemen, and probably very worthy of those appointments. I'm just confused as to why this is an appropriate time when it wasn't part of the call.
It doesn't have to be part of the call. Just whenever we're in regular session, if we don't move to give advice and consent to a committee and bring it to the body, it is our practice that we ask the governor, whatever governor it is, to withdraw the letters, and they can be brought again, or he can appoint them as interim until also the Constitution requires that we take this up in special session.
So you're saying that in the Constitution it says that if these appointments need to be withdrawn, whether we're in an extraordinary, what if we were not in session during this time frame?
They would serve as an interim appointment until we were in session.
So rather than having them serve as interim, the governor is asking to withdraw them, and then I see that he's going to ask them to, after what will follow this motion, I believe, will be to consider them.
Yeah, and I'm referring to Article 4, Section 50 of the Constitution.
And I believe I have that in my desk. But so I do have it. I'm going to actually look through it, perhaps, Senator, with another member who can help me walk through it, unless you are willing. Article 4, which section?
Section 50.
50?
50.
Okay, I'm actually...
51.
51. So I'm looking through it. Shall be made by the governor, shall be made only by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. The authority to act of any person whose appointment requires the advice and consent shall commence if the Senate is in session upon receiving the advice and consent of the Senate. If the Senate is not in session, the authority to act shall commence immediately upon appointment by the governor, but shall terminate if the advice and consent of the Senate is not given within 30 days. So, in other words, if we don't do this today, then the governor either appoints them as interim members.
They're already interim. Well, he can. He can reappoint them as interim members after the names withdrawn, just as the previous governor did in sessions before.
I'm just, you know, I guess what's surprising to me is I don't recall running into this before during special session. And so that's why I'm obviously confused about whether this is an appropriate time. So what we're going to do today is to withdraw them from consideration, and then we're going to turn around today and ask to appoint them?
No.
We are not. So those second memos.
We're sending the names back. The governor asking that their letters be withdrawn.
Right. But then underneath that, I'm sorry, on my pages that I received on my desk, there is one asking for us to appoint with our advice and consent each of these two gentlemen whose names we were asking to be removed today. So we're not going to utilize those second two pages that are dated the same as the top one, June 12th.
We're not having a hearing on the gubernatorial appointments.
So we will not be having that hearing. So all you're doing is asking to remove their names so that at a later date they can be then sent back to the Senate for consideration of their appointments.
That's correct.
Thank you. I understand. And, you know, I don't know if anybody has any concern about these particular gentlemen. I know nothing about them. I know they wanted to be appointed to the Kansas City Board of Police Commissioners. And I guess if their names get withdrawn today, they will have an opportunity to be appointed at a later time. Thank you, Senator.
That's why we'll have a hearing at the gubernatorial appointments and see if they meet the constitutional muster.
That'll be after
the first year.
After the first year. So in the next regular legislative session,
yep.
Not in a special session or during veto session.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Senator.
Senator, the Senator desire to be heard. Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from Newton.
Senator from Newton, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think I kind of followed what you were saying in that he made these recess appointments because they were announced a few days ago.
Yeah, yesterday or the day before, I believe.
Okay, and so then since we're now in session, if we don't take them up and approve them, then it's a problem, so he has to withdraw them.
And we don't want to penalize these people, whoever they are.
Right.
If we don't withdraw a letter, they would never be able to serve on any level whatsoever.
Right. So I understand that. I guess my confusion is about the stack of letters that we have here, all three dated today. And so which one's in effect? The one withdrawing or the ones asking for their nomination? Because they're all dated the same, and they're also received by the Secretary of the Senate at 3:20 p.m. So how's this going to work? If we reject them, we also have messages from the governor to go ahead and reappoint them. So doesn't that also start the 60-day clock? I mean, all three letters are dated today, and all three letters were received in the exact same minute. So I'm just confused about that. And the only reason I ask is this is an important thing to Kansas City. Obviously, we have vacancies on the board right now.
I just want
to know how this is going to work out. I don't have any issues with either of these gentlemen.
I want to make sure we don't penalize. The governor appointed them and can withdraw them at the same time, and we just received the letters, as you saw on your desk, the letters today. So that's all the information I have. I just want to make sure that we can get them withdrawn so they can serve if the Senate decides to give advice consent and there's no penalty for these people.
Okay, so did we read these into the journal? Was this a message received from the governor earlier?
It was.
Okay, so then we're going to vote on the withdrawal, and we're just going to ignore the appointment ones?
That's correct.
And then that doesn't screw them up, because I don't want to... Because my guess is,
Let me ask Secretary of the Senate and make sure this doesn't affect the further appointments of these...
Because we're essentially acting on one and leaving the other two ignored, is what it seems like.
The journal will show them appointed and withdrawn.
Okay.
So it will not affect them.
So then my guess is that as soon as this special session is over, has the governor indicated that he will appoint them immediately to fill the vacancies as a recess appointment? Is that the intention here?
He hasn't spoken to me, nor the majority leader that I know of, but I assume if he thought enough of these people to start with, I assume he'd make an interim appointment again.
Okay.
For a confirmation in the first year.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from Clay.
To inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'm looking here. Are either of these two appointments in your district?
It looks like Nathan Garrett is in my district. It looks like Tolbert might be in the 9th.
Might be in the 9th. Has the governor talked to you about these appointments?
No.
So
governor hasn't talked to me at all.
So the governor made an appointment of someone in your district that you would have to carry here in the Senate and hasn't asked you about it?
I'm going to guess that is going to need to be done before they become commissioners.
So you have no idea, indication one way or the other, once we get done with the special session, whether they'll be reappointed or not?
No.
I mean, you know this is a big deal at home. We have these vacancies on the board. We have our police chief has left. We're now looking for a new police chief. I want to make sure that we have people in these positions. I thought maybe you had been talked to. It's a little concerning to me that you haven't.
Senator, the governor is too busy doing rallies to talk to me about governing.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from Clay.
Inquire of the Senator from the 9th.
Senator from the 9th. Do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. So is Mr. Tolbert, is he your constituent?
He is my constituent.
Has the governor talked to you about appointing Mr. Tolbert?
He has, actually.
Progress. Great.
Has, yes.
Okay, so, and I assume you're okay with Mr. Tolbert. I haven't heard.
Oh, absolutely. I think he'd be a great candidate, of course. It was one of my recommendations, and I'm glad to see that he was appointed. Now, I also just want to make sure there's no funny business here. I think that this is typically what happens, like, say, when we're in veto session every year. Is it not that typically those appointments are supposed to come up in the next session in that session, whether it happens to be veto or special session? If we're not going to consider appointments, I think they typically withdraw them and
right.
reappoint.
I'm not concerned about that so much as
I wanted to make sure
all
that
three letters were received in the
happens.
Exact same minute, so I wanted to know which order we were considering them in.
Right.
So when did the governor talk to you about Mr. Tolbert?
I think the governor himself, I think we had a brief conversation about it maybe once, but his staff, of course, several times, at least three.
Like several weeks ago or a couple days ago? Like when did this... Because I read about it in the paper, like, it seems like maybe a week ago or something.
I think it's been a process during session, then again toward the end of session, after session. We've had some discussion about Bishop Tolbert.
Okay. So do you have any indication from the governor, since he's talking to you, that you will that he will get recess appointed as soon as this special session concludes?
No, I don't. I certainly hope that that's the case. I mean, I hope that what is happening here is something that's customary and something that's not different from what we typically do, in that, of course, these appointments were not addressed in the call, which means that, of course, we would not consider them during special session. So I'm hoping that this is that we're going through this customary measure and this is not something unexpected, of course, right now.
Right, and of course, my concern would be that if this is someone who you would endorse and would carry the nomination for, that we aren't going to leave it vacant, that he will get recess appointed when we leave here.
Right, I certainly hope so.
So hopefully, maybe you should ask him about that, or maybe you should reach out and make sure that once we reject
will.
This, we're not leaving vacancies on the board while Kansas City is searching for a police chief.
Right, I agree there. I'll be contacting his staff. Certainly in a bit, just to make certain.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Senator from the 7th, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Newton.
Senator from Newton, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from the 7th?
Yes.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I wanted to know, we were having some conversations before we came into session today. Has the governor signed the smelter bill?
I don't know.
Has he? Because we had an emergency clause on there. We pushed it through. We didn't do a floor sub because we were concerned about the timing of it. There was a lot of pressure at that moment to get it done because the board was making decisions. And just want to know if all of our hard work during that special session has been signed.
I have no idea, but I'm sure the Senator from Butler will know, but I have no idea.
Have you talked to the governor about that bill, or have you talked to the governor about this special session here? Has he reached out to you? And
I have not.
He has not? Okay, thank you. Mr. President?
Senator from 7th?
Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from the 7th?
Yes, absolutely.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I don't know if you heard my inquiry with the Senator from Newton, but are you aware as the governor signed the smelter bill that we passed at the first special session?
I don't know if the governor has signed it. I know that the president and the speaker have came in about a week ago. A week ago today.
So we did our part, but we don't know if he's followed through on actually signing. Because we had an emergency clause on there. Remember, there was a big rush. We couldn't send it back over to the House because we were worried about a committee decide or the board deciding.
No, I am unaware if he has signed that.
Has the governor talked to you about this special session that I think is unconstitutional?
The one we're in right now?
The one that we're in.
We're trying to start right now?
Yeah.
I have not had direct communication. I've talked to some folks in his office, in all fairness.
Okay, but you have not spoken.
I have not talked to him personally.
Okay, so the governor's called us back in, hasn't done his job from the first special session, and has not talked to our two leaders of the Senate. I just want to make sure we're all clear where we're starting from here.
Crystal.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, for what reason do you rise?
I have a resolution, and I'd like to keep the floor after. What?
Senator from Buchanan, would you like to?
No. Go right ahead. Okay, Mr. President, to inquire of the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield to an inquiry to Senator from Buchanan?
I do. Thank you, Mr.
You
President.
You may proceed.
Senator, you heard the inquiry of the Senator from the 7th. Do you know whether or not the Great Seal of Missouri has signed the bill, you know, House Bill 1, the big bill for which we had to come into special session?
I am not aware of that bill being signed, no.
Okay. Well, you know, he called us into special session because it was so important. We had to have an emergency clause.
Very timely.
And
very
in
timely.
Fact, I wanted to put an amendment on, and the senator from the 23rd, and we weren't allowed to put the amendment on to ensure that, you know, electric utilities wouldn't sell electricity for less than their incremental cost. Remember that? It was so important, so very important. And you're telling me that the Great Seal has not even signed the bill yet.
You know, that's, I think that's an accurate statement. I haven't been notified of any movement on signing that bill.
Okay. I just wanted, Mr. President, thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator. Mr. President.
Senator Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Buchanan?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
Senator, you recall the last day of our special session.
I do.
And you remember that you had an amendment that would prohibit electric utilities from selling electricity below their incremental cost. But that's the law now. But your amendment would say that the Public Service Commission would not be allowed to authorize a rate lower than the electric utility's incremental cost, because you and I were afraid that if they did so, then all the people in the Ameren service area would bear that additional cost. You remember that?
I do. I do, Senator.
Okay, now you remember at the time that I said to you you know, we can do this if you want to stand for several hours. You really didn't think that it was worth the political capital. Remember that?
Well, I don't know if it was a matter of me willing to spend political capital or not, Senator. I think it was a question of, I think that we had made our points to the body, and I think it was a question of whether or not continuing on further would have crossed a line that you identified I wasn't willing to cross.
Well, some further information has come to light since that day. And one of the Republican representatives from the House was describing their caucus to me and told me that during their caucus meeting, one of the representatives stood up and said, I want to offer an amendment to ensure that the Public Service Commission does not authorize a rate below the incremental cost. And the leadership of the House, according to this report, said that would be a deal breaker. Now, if that's a deal breaker, in my mind, what it means is that they fully intend to give a rate lower than the incremental cost. What do you think? What that means?
Well, this was a concern that I shared 3 weeks ago when we were here. And this, my concern always in that case, and again, I know that we're not trying to open this one back up for discussion, but I was concerned that the only way a fiscal deal would make sense would be if a special rate was offered below the cost of service. And my objection to that bill, which I continued to, you and I both voted no on, my objection to that bill was that that represented a scenario in which this company could only survive if government intervened on exclusively its behalf. And that is a path that I encourage the body, and I think at length, encourage the body not to pursue.
But if the leadership of the House said that such an amendment would be a deal breaker, does not that, in your mind, imply that they fully intend to give such a rate?
Well, that was my fear from the very beginning. That was a fear that I discussed on the floor.
So you would agree that that's what they fully intend. Now, you remember, is that correct?
I agree, that's a possibility. No,
that's
question.
Probably what
that's
they
a
intend.
That's probability.
Probability, high probability. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you remember that on that day, we were told, oh no, you got to get this bill done. Because you remember the House had adjourned until Tuesday. Tuesday, I think, was the first of the month. And that this company just had to make this deal by that first of the month or the whole thing could fall through. Oh, my gosh. It was an emergency. It was extraordinary. And we even put an emergency clause on it. But the Great Seal of Missouri has not yet signed the bill. Is that true?
I believe that is accurate, yes.
I'm kind of disappointed if it was such an emergency. You know what? Knowing what I know now, if I had known that they had called that a deal breaker, I might have wanted to stand with you. Actually, I might have invited you to stand with me and insist that we not put the burden of a special rate for one special interest on all of the ratepayers in your district, and there's the possibility that in the future that burden could be on the ratepayers in my district for a different special interest because of that bill. I have regret now that we didn't do that. I just want you to know. Anyway, I understand that the Great Seal of Missouri had an event in your district the other day. And it was a special event, and that I heard through the grapevine that you asked to be part of that event and you were denied. Is that true?
You're speaking about the pro-life rally that was...
Yes.
I heard about that rally, and I think I've been very clear that I support the philosophy behind this legislation. And so I reached out to the governor's office and made myself available to be a part of that rally. I ultimately did attend that rally, and I was happy to do so. I made a commitment to my constituents that I was going to take every opportunity to fight for the sanctity of life. And I think that my presence here today and how I intend to vote on the legislation, and granted, I just was handed the legislation less than 30 minutes ago, but this is an outstanding opportunity for me to make good on that commitment. I think that certainly this doesn't preclude a discussion about procedure, and you and I have had plenty of discussions about procedure, but as I've said before, it's always a good day to defend the sanctity of life, and that's what I'm here to do.
So did you ask to participate in that rally, and were you denied?
Well, I think that I did participate in the rally. I did participate in the rally. I did attend the rally. I stood next to several of my colleagues from the House and the senator from the Second, and participated in that. I'm not sure I understand where you're going.
The governor's
office, the senator from Second, they both welcomed me.
I just wonder
me.
If he refused your ability to participate in the rally. That's what I had heard. I don't know if it's a rumor that I just...
No, I was never... No, I don't think that... It would have been stunning to me to hear the governor's office not want me to participate. I never got that impression.
You know, it occurs to me that we ought to call a special session of our own, the House and the Senate, and consider a joint resolution that would limit the number of special sessions that a governor could call. You know, that might be interesting.
Well, yeah. I think those parameters already exist within the Constitution, Senator, and the parameter is the definition of extraordinary. If you start putting hard limits on there, what if we have a massive natural disaster that happens a number of times over that limit in the state? I think that may run us into difficult territory. Part of the key part of this equation is that we must continue to believe that we're all acting under the mandates of the Constitution, which specify that these special sessions are only called in instances of extraordinary environment.
Okay. Well, thank you for your inquiry. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Buchanan?
You
may proceed.
Well, Senator, I heard that the other day, or sometime recently, the Great Seal of Missouri signed your Real ID bill.
He did. It was a great day for Missouri. It was this afternoon, actually, or this morning, I think around 11:30.
Were you there?
I was not there. I was not there. The senator from Johnson was there.
You know, you and I worked on that bill early in the session, trying to get it together and make it happen. And so it's kind of important to me, and I'm just surprised. Why weren't you there?
We did. You know, actually, I asked for that bill, you know, because when you pass a bill, you know, you get to, you know, you tell the governor, I would like a signed copy, or I would like a public signing, and I suggest you sign it at a certain place. Both the sponsoring House member, Representative Corlew, and myself, we both asked for that bill to be signed publicly in your district, believe it or not, at KCI Airport. But it wasn't. It was signed at Whiteman Air Force Base today, and I found out about it from Representative Corlew.
Huh. Was he invited?
He was. He was there.
Huh. But you weren't.
I was not invited.
Have any idea why?
I have a couple ideas why, but... I don't think the governor likes confrontation.
You know what I think? I think that the Great Seal of Missouri is afraid of confrontation.
I think he might have been uncomfortable having to stand next to me and sign my legislation.
I think that you're right, and he doesn't like discomfort. That's what I think. I think that it was extreme slap in the face to you for him not to invite you to the signing of the bill that you were so intimately involved with.
You know, I think that's right. And I thought a lot about it over the weekend. And it was interesting, you know, because Governor Nixon and I fought like cats and dogs. You remember, for 8 years, he and I were basically at each other's throats. I called him King Jay. We had political cartoons with both of us drawn in there. I mean, we were at each other's throats most of the time. But Governor Nixon, to his credit, when I passed a bill that was good public policy, that he felt was worthy of public notice, he held a public signing and asked me to be there on the stage with him. And I would stand there, even though the two of us disagreed, as gentlemen, I would stand there behind him and smile as he signed my bill. So that, you know, good for Governor Nixon. That's a lesson on how to be a governor.
Yeah. You know, I understand that at a rally recently for this special session, actually this extraordinary session, that the governor said, pray for the career politicians in the Senate.
He did say that. I was not very happy about that statement either, Senator.
Well, you know, I don't consider myself a career politician. I'm a doctor. I see patients. And I get a part-time salary for a part-time job. The governor gets a full-time salary for a full-time job and lives in government housing. You know, he wants to be president of the United States, and I think that everything that he does is done to burnish his reputation for that.
You know what was so offensive to me about that statement, Senator, was, you know, many of us in this chamber are people of faith, and we take it seriously in our relationship with our Creator, and, you know, the governor has chosen the words career politician to turn them into an attack, to make them name-calling. And to pray for someone, to ask for someone to be prayed for while calling them names, you know, it has the tone of, you know, dear Lord, I pray for those dirty, rotten scoundrels to get their hearts right like I have. You know, it reminds me of the Pharisees, is what it reminds me of. If you're familiar with Scripture, you know, the Pharisees that held themselves up as being perfect and pointed at everyone else as being flawed.
Well, let me just tell you that when he calls me and everyone else in the Senate chamber a career politician, he doesn't deserve the title of governor. And that is why I refer to him as the Great Seal of Missouri, since he's so proud of it.
Well, you know what, Senator? We only have a couple more years of that, because, as you remember, a couple of weeks ago, his senior advisor referred to the senator from Butler as a career politician. And as you know, this is the senator from Butler's first elected office. And he's only been in it for 5 years. I think this was the fifth session for the senator from Butler. So if 5 years is the threshold for the governor's senior advisor to be considered a career politician, then if this governor should be fortunate enough to be reelected, he's a career politician.
Fine.
All of his previous experience is out the window, and now he's a career politician, and I guess he should be asking people to pray for himself.
Well, you know, just 3 days ago, I understand that he was in a speech in St. Charles County, and he used the Great Seal.
Oh, okay.
And used the term career politician. And
was that the one in the senator from the 23rd District?
Apparently it was. And, you know, apparently used a lot of adjectives that weren't really friendly to the members of the Senate, and it's just not becoming of a governor. Anyway, I just wanted to ask you those questions, and I appreciate your inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from the second.
Senator from the second, do you yield to an inquiry of the senator from Buchanan?
I do.
You may proceed.
Well, here we are, Senator.
Good evening, Senator.
In the big, extraordinary session, the great extraordinary session, the extraordinary session we've all been waiting for, the all-important extraordinary session, the extraordinary session to end all extraordinary sessions. The question is, you know, this is basically for your bill. And my question is,
Senator, it is to undo some of the damage to our longstanding standards to protect the health and safety of women.
Right,
and it's
Senator.
To protect the First Amendment rights and religious liberties of pregnancy care centers.
The thing is, yeah, is that
I think
we had your bill
we're agreement
the
on the substance. I think we're agreement on the substance, but you call it my bill. Yeah. I think it's a lot bigger than me, and again, if one of my fellow members wanted to carry it, I'd be fine with that. I think it's important, though, that we get this done.
Right, but Senator, we had your bill during the session. And this call...
Well, the call isn't exactly my bill. It's,
the
really,
call,
it's really a lot different than
the call
bill.
Is so detailed. I mean, it goes into great detail. And my question is, did you work with the Great Seal of Missouri to develop this call?
Well, I think some of the call is clearly is taken from Senate Bill 67 filed by myself, Senate Bill 41 filed by the senator from Cape Girardeau, I forget the bill number, but the bill filed by the senator from the 15th. Some of it actually is just actually, and the reason that the bill is as thick as it's going to be once I get a chance to file it is that many pages of it are devoted to adding the word abortion facility, where it used to say, or where it will still say, ambulatory surgery center, so that we can restore some of the, again, common sense safety regulations that Judge Sachs struck down. Now, some of them, you know, Judge Sachs said, look, Judge Sachs believe that ambulatory surgery centers and physician privileges requirements are unconstitutional. So what a lot of this call does, and a lot of the bill I'm about to file does, is redelegates that authority to the Department of Health and Senior Services to produce common sense health and safety regulations. Because I think there was a lot of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, if you will, when a judge does such a sweeping ruling. So infection control measures, reporting measures, fire safety measures, there are some things that just needed to be reestablished after Judge Sachs's ruling.
I think there do, but isn't it true that that law that was passed by St. Louis is being fought in the court by the Pregnancy Resource Center and the church?
Oh, yeah, there was a lawsuit filed on May 22nd against that. Of course, that could take, you know, lawsuits can take years.
I know, but don't you think that it would take us all the way up until January where we could do this without additional cost to the taxpayers?
I think when fundamental constitutional rights are at stake, I think that that represents an emergency, and it represents an extraordinary measure and an extraordinary situation and merits extraordinary.
Does your bill have an emergency clause?
It does.
So did the steel mill bill, Senator.
It did.
And the governor hasn't signed that yet. Well, Senator, I think my point is made. I honestly, and you know this, I don't feel that there is anything special about this, you know, this matter, this issue, that we couldn't deal with during the special session. And we could deal with it in January. And so I just kind of feel like here we are once again, and all we're doing is trying to burnish the pro-life credentials of the Great Seal of Missouri. And I just feel like we oughtn't to be pawns for him in order to do that. That's what I think. Thank you for your inquiry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, the senator desire to be heard. Senator from the 7th.
To inquire the senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please.
I saw a couple of highway patrolmen earlier. You can send them for him if you'd like.
May not be the first time.
Mr. President, while we're waiting for the senator to Clay to get to his desk, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield to an inquiry of the senator from the 7th?
I do.
You may proceed.
Did you say there were highway patrolmen in the building?
I heard that they were stationed at different points to make sure that, I'm not sure what the reasoning was, but I did understand their presence was here.
I was wondering that myself, because I've seen so many, more than ordinarily would be here. I think I've seen at least 7 or 8 patrolmen, and I'm just wondering if that would be within the call, if that would be added into the price of the special session. I'm also wondering what the threat is. I don't know. I don't know if it's here because if they're here because people may come in and not be happy with what we're doing in this chamber, or if they're here because we're not happy and they don't like how we're behaving, so we'd be drug into the chamber. I don't know. I'm just curious as to why so many. And I thought maybe if you've seen them and you talk to everybody, we all know that. So I was just curious as to whether you had a conversation with any of them and knew why they were here and had such a presence. I mean, I have never felt threatened in this building, and I'm just getting tired of such a large police presence in the people's building. And I don't want to feel like that if there are people here that are either on one side of the issue or another, that they're going to feel like they're coming into a police state if they come into their capital to speak their mind or to voice their opinion in the next few days.
Well, I appreciate your concern. I've called for one investigation today. I will take up the other one and try to find out for you.
Well, Professor Clouseau, I hope you get an answer for me.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
To inquire of the Senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay. Do you yield to the inquiry of the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
You may proceed.
Okay, Senator, I'm just trying to put all this together. So the governor calls us in for a special session, says this is an emergency, it's extraordinary. You and I didn't argue with them because we have precedents of other companies on a timeline to try to make a decision to bring jobs to the state, and we acquiesced to that call. You worked very hard with members of leadership of this chamber, with members of leadership and the bill sponsor in the House, to get that bill done. I disagreed with you a little bit on the urgency of it. I thought that we could have done a floor sub on that last day, that it could have gone back to the House, that was an option. You felt very strongly that the timing of it was very important.
Well, we were told that it needed to be done by the 1st of June, which is why it's a little striking it hasn't been signed yet.
Which is interesting also. So we have this narrative that sort of brought pressure upon the chamber, and then the governor hasn't even done his job after calling us in from doing our real jobs.
Yeah, so if I would have known then what I knew today, that we would send him that bill and that it would just sit on his desk until, what is it, the 12th? And he said it had to be there by the 1st. I probably would have been more open to some of the discussions that were going on that would have sent the bill back to the House. I mean, there was definitely some language that the Senate could have added that I didn't think were things that killed the bill from a policy perspective. It was only because we were being told by the second floor that this had to be done by the 1st and that we couldn't send it back to the House. Everything would get screwed up if it got sent back to the House. If I knew that today, if I knew then what I know today, the Senate probably would have been amending that bill.
Okay, so we have that circumstance where
I think I'm breaking the heart of the senator from the 23rd here.
He should have got a CIA napkin. The Senate picks that up, we leave our private sector jobs. The governor calls us a career politician, but he's the only one that's keeping us here, making us career politicians, and I'll talk about that when I file my SJR when the time comes.
Well, he's the full-time politician.
He's the full-time politician. Right. So then we do that, hasn't signed the bill. We go back to our private sector jobs and back to our districts, and then he calls another one for an unextraordinary circumstance. Are you aware of judges' decisions on a regular basis? I mean, the judicial branch does work. They are full-time branch of government.
So here, let me tell you this, this is why I voted against the resolution today. This is why I'm against this special session as an extraordinary session. And the underlying language likely don't have a problem with. Although when we get to the debate, I am going to have some questions about that ordinance in St. Louis because I don't know how many people in here have actually read that ordinance. But I have, and it seems pretty cut and dry to me. So we're going to have some questions about that. But as far as being pro-life, I have a 13-year record in the legislature of being pro-life. I don't have a problem with, doing some of the regulatory things that are being proposed. Here's the problem that I have. Having been through this process so many times now, almost every single bill that we pass on abortion gets sued over. And almost every time it gets sued over, there's an injunction, which basically puts the law on hold until it's litigated. So here's the problem I have. We are now spending extra money on the taxpayers to come into a special extraordinary session that we wouldn't otherwise be spending to pass a bill that will virtually no chance that it doesn't get sued over, very highly gets injuncted. So then we spend more money defending that bill, probably doesn't get resolved by January of next year. So if there is, in fact, an injunction on whatever we end up passing in the special session, the law will be suspended. So between now and January, we really haven't changed anything other than spent more money to pass it and spent more money to defend it in court. And in January, we're in the exact same place from a legal public policy standpoint as we are today. That's why I have a problem with it. If we were to come back in January and do this under the regular order of business, you're still going to end up with the lawsuit. You're still going to end up defending it in court. But at least you're not spending extra money to get there. And it is absolutely not fiscally conservative to bring us into session to pass something that we know is going to go down that path. That's the problem I have.
Okay, so that's one of the parts of the call. The other part of the call is you're aware that cities pass ordinances every day.
Right.
Well, every Thursday or however, whenever they have their legislative sessions.
Sure.
And we are now putting front and center an ordinance that you said you've read and couldn't find where the real heartburn was, but you're going to need to at least have someone explain what the problem is with that ordinance. But it's an ordinance not unlike other ordinances that the city of St. Louis or the city of Kansas City or the city of Springfield or any locality has also passed, correct?
Right.
It's not extraordinary that they've passed an ordinance that you might disagree with.
Correct.
All right.
But that ordinance is already in litigation. So essentially what's happened is they've passed an ordinance. Some people have had a problem with it, said that it's going to cause a problem in the pro-life community and the religious community. So they filed lawsuits, so it's tied up in litigation right now. So now we're spending additional money to come into special session to short-circuit litigation instead of letting the third branch of government do its job. That's also a problem.
So I think that this entire sitting right now is unconstitutional. I don't think it's extraordinary that judges make decisions. I don't think it's extraordinary that cities pass ordinances. And when you disagree with an ordinance or you disagree with the judicial decision, then you come in regular session and you file legislation to deal with that. That's how that works. And what I think is happening here is that this governor, because he likes the attention, because he likes the campaign, the nonstop, incessant campaigning that he's been engaged in, he's using this platform to bring the attention on the issue when in actuality what he's doing is cheapening the special session. When you actually do have an extraordinary circumstance and you do have a natural disaster and you do have to spend the taxpayers' money on something that needs to bring us back. That's what he's doing. So I think this is an unconstitutional thing. So looking at the big picture, we had a special session that we worked hard to pass legislation that he has not signed.
Right.
We have another special session.
But at least in that one, it fit the mold of previous special sessions.
But in this special session, we don't have extraordinary circumstances other than Facebook posts. And now he's asking us to violate our oaths of the Constitution by doing this vanity session. And to further enrage every member of the Senate, because he hasn't even talked to our leadership. He hasn't even taken the time to explain to the President Pro Tem of this Senate what his thoughts are on why this is extraordinary. So if he's not going to sign the legislation that came out of the first special session in a timely manner on which created the extraordinary circumstances, and he's not going to communicate with the leaders of this Senate on why this one's being called, which I believe to be unconstitutional, then I have to ask, are we a Senate? Or are we executive branch staff? Are we lemmings? Or are we elected representatives of the people, a co-equal branch of government? That's the question that every single senator should be asking themselves right now. It's not about the issue. It's not about, rather, you're going to violate your oath of the Constitution because you're pro-life. Because you can be pro-life and still uphold the Constitution. You can be pro-life and still defend the Senate. You can be pro-life and still believe that we have a separation of powers between the branches and uphold our branch of government. Because right now, Senator, the way I see things going, our branch of government is slowly diluting itself. Diluting and diluting. Because what we should be doing is telling this governor, no. It doesn't matter what your vanity issue is. This Senate is not going to bow to your whims because you want to violate, or you want us to violate the Constitution. But we should have the courage of the people who sent us here and adjourn sine die right now.
You know, Senator, I've made it a point in my time in the legislature to try and always find the path, whatever that path is. And I think that while I agree with many of the things that you've said in your speech, there's another path that the Senate has where the Senate could assert itself. The Senate could stand up for the Senate. The Senate could send the message to the governor that we govern ourselves and still handle the pro-life issue, because I know it's important to many of the members here. And I know that that's why, ultimately, I think whatever ends up happening here, I think a bill gets passed. Because ultimately, I'm not going to vote against the bill despite the governor. Let's just be honest. I don't think we should be here. I don't think it's extraordinary. The bill gets to a final vote. I'm not going to vote against it because of my feelings for the governor, because I care more about policy than politics or image.
Now, and he's using that as leverage against the Senate.
Because he knows that at the end of the day, most of us are serious policymakers, and that's what's going to happen. However,
you know why?
However,
you know why? Because a career politician actually knows how to govern.
So the Constitution says once we call ourselves in, which we're in now, we have 60 days. Okay? Now, when the governor called us in the first time, he called us in with 3 or 4 or 5 days lead time, didn't call the leadership of our chamber, to my knowledge, and say, hey, I'm calling you in a special session on the steel mill. This time, didn't call us ahead of time, didn't call the leadership that I'm aware of, and say, hey, I'm going to call you in to deal with this abortion issue. Gave us like 5 or 6 days for everybody to cancel what they're doing, clear their schedules, and get back to Jefferson City. So what another path might be that addresses the concerns of the pro-life members and gets something done, but also asserts the Senate, is to say, okay, look, we got 60 days to do this. This doesn't have to happen this week. We have several members that aren't here. I know a member that's on military orders. I know a member that's out for surgery. There's multiple members that aren't here today for one reason or another. And the argument probably could be made that had they been given a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of heads up, hey, we're going to call you back in, this is important, they probably might have been able to find a way to be here. So the Senate can do that for itself. We have 60 days. If we decided, you know what, it's not fair to cram through a bill when 5, 6, 7 of our members, however many it is, I haven't seen, I'll look at the roll later to see who was here and who wasn't, but to cram through this bill without their districts being represented because they aren't here for legitimate reasons, because we're not supposed to be here, we could pick a time. We could say, let's adjourn to a week from now. Let's adjourn to 2 weeks from now.
We only have 10 days. You can only adjourn for 10 days without the other branch concurring.
At a time.
At a time.
Sure. So adjourn for 10 days.
So we could adjourn for 10 days.
I'm sure the House would go along with it. I doubt the House would stamp its foot down and go, no, you have to come back, and they don't even have a bill filed.
We could adjourn for 10 days.
This could be worked out within the legislative branch.
Technical, make a new motion to adjourn another 10 days. Why don't we go back August 6th
when our
kids go back to school?
It doesn't. There, I mean, that would be a reasonable option in my mind. I think because, again, in my mind, and I know that not everybody here is going to agree with this, but in my mind, we're going to pass something, and a week later, it's going to be injuncted in court anyway. So at least it should be done with the full representation of the Senate. You know, and that's a path that would, you know, here's
we have until August. We have until August 12th. August 11th is a Friday. So we could adjourn consecutive 10 days, every 10 days.
We can call ourselves in the session.
Oh, I was just handed a note that says the 10-day rule only applies during regular session.
Oh, well, perfect.
So
there you go.
So what we could do is we could set the time to adjourn to, I don't know, when you would come back, August 7th? August 7th through August 11th? And then that way we'll take that week.
I mean, there's only a handful of us in here that
would
still have kids.
Maybe the minority party would be willing to agree that in that time period we're going to complete the work of this call. If we go to August 7th through August 11th.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of options. But I think it's clear, certainly, that the governor has no respect for this process, or he would have at least talked to the people.
Or he doesn't understand it. He is an outsider, and that means that he doesn't know what career politicians do to make the state run.
Hey, look, if you can go to Oxford and you can be a SEAL and you can do all of those other things that he's got on his resume and not understand that you should call the head of the Senate and you should call the head of the House before you ask them to come back into extraordinary session, I'm not gonna give him that out.
Or you should invite the sponsoring senator.
I think he's smart enough to know. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's very proud of that. He's smart enough to know.
So, okay, so if it's not ignorance, then what is it? Is it nefariousness? Maniacalness? I mean, what, not to invite you to the bill sponsoring that you worked so hard to pass? I understand that that's not an issue to you. Is he going to invite the senator from Butler to the smelter signing whenever he does that?
I doubt it. But I don't know. I mean, that's...
I mean, when and who is going to stand up for this chamber? Because you know what's funny to me is I look at what the governor's doing, and yeah, he's degrading our chamber, but what he's really doing is harming the office of governor. Because the less we respect him, the less power the governor has, and he is a co-equal branch of government.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
No, I think I would agree with that. You know, there were times during the previous administration I thought it would be hard to respect the office less.
Yeah, I know. When you took the governor's chef, Governor Nixon's chef, that was a pretty good wallop. But he still invited you to bill signings.
Governor Nixon and I went round and round. And, you know, I still, you know what, we still talked. We still talked. He would have me down to the office. We would, we disagreed vehemently a number of times. But, you know, he understood at least how to be a governor.
Well, here's my prediction. You and I are going to end our inquiry. We're going to dispense with the senator from Newton's motion. And then we're going to do nothing. We're going to do nothing. Because we're more afraid of what the people at home say about whether you're pro-life or not, rather than you want to stand up and defend this branch of government. And that's sad. Thank you, Senator.
Well, Senator, okay, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President.
President.
Senator from Clay.
Inquire of the Senator from Green.
Senator from Green, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
Always yield to my colleagues, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I know that you have been working diligently on something, although I'm not quite sure what. I'm wondering if you've had an appropriate amount of time or if you need more time to do whatever it is that you're doing.
Well, I
trust whatever it is in good hands. I just don't know what it is or how far along you are.
Thank you for asking that, Senator. You know, I never want to inconvenience my colleagues, but if I had a little bit more time to continue working on what I'm working on, it might be beneficial.
Okay. That's good enough for me.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. President. A point of personal privilege.
Is The Senator from the 11th has requested a moment of personal privilege. Senator from the 11th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't want to stray too far off topic, but the other morning I was at home or on vacation, as the governor likes to put it, and I ran across an article that I believe I saw on Facebook or somewhere online. As most people, I think, our age get our news nowadays, unfortunately. It was in the Post-Dispatch that was by a reporter by the name of Jesse Bogan. And the headline reads, Missouri Parole Board Played Word Games During Hearings with Inmates. I'd like to read that again so we can let that sink in. Missouri Parole Board played word games during hearings with inmates. The people that are there to decide whether someone's life can get back on track were playing word games during this hearing. And if my colleagues would indulge me, I really would like to just read real quick. It's about 2.5 pages or so exactly what was going on with one of the commissioners of the parole board or on the board of probation. And I first would like to take my hats off to Jesse Bogan for the article. I'm not a huge fan of some of the media that comes out nowadays, but he did an outstanding job. And this is in St. Louis. They're from St. Louis Post-Dispatch, of course, like I said. The Missouri Board of Probation and Parole allegedly toyed with prisoners during hearings by trying to get them to say a chosen word or song title of the day, such as platypus and hound dog. Don Rizicka, a member of the 7-member board, along with an unnamed government employee, were accused of keeping score during hearings. According to the Department of Corrections Inspector General report completed on November 1st, 2016, each time one of them used a predetermined keyword while interviewing an offender, they earned a point. 2 points were granted if the offender repeated the word. Occasionally, the duo spiced the game up by wearing matching clothing, like the time they dressed in black shirts, ties, pants, and shoes. The Roderick and Solange MacArthur Justice Center at St. Louis recently obtained the state report and released it Thursday after a news conference asserting that public servants played games with the people's lives and liberty. These activities so far as we are aware have never come to light in the public's eye, said Mae Quinn, director of the nonprofit human rights law firm. They simply were not taking their duties seriously and their role as appointed officials and public servants seriously. The group and other supporters called on Governor Eric Greitens to reform the board, including immediate removal of Rizicka. The 7-member parole board responsible for determining whether a person confined in the Department of Corrections will be paroled or conditionally released and for supervising thousands of people on probation and parole. They run the hearing by in person or in video. Critics, including people who held leadership positions for the Corrections Department, have said in recent years that they want the parole board to be reformed. They believe it operates almost entirely in secret and has become a plum place for former lawmakers to land since term limits have been in place. Goes on to talk about the board member that was in question, the salary, things like that. And then I'll skip forward just for a matter of time to the next part of the article, which was called Keeping Score, to talk about how disgusting this act was. Hootenanny was the word of the day on June 21st, 2016. According to the Inspector General's report, the unnamed department employee used the word 4 times during one hearing, each time Rizicka laughed out loud. During the hearing, the employee whispered to Rizicka, "I got 4 points." In another hearing that day, Rizicka referenced the song Peggy Sue. He asked the offender if she was named after the song. The department employee laughed and said he was just trying to lighten the mood. "Or you could just have a hootenanny," Rizicka countered. "Yes, we could have a hootenanny," the employee said, whispering that points would be counted. Asked when she first used heroin, the offender said it was at a rave. "I thought they might have called it a hootenanny," said the employee. "A what?" the offender responded. "A hootenanny," the department employee said. "A party." Rizicka and the employee laughed again. Platypus and armadillo were the words of the day on June 22nd. followed by Biomass and Manatee the next day at hearings in July. Song titles include Soul Man, All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Tonight, Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, Hound Dog, and Folsom Prison Blues. For instance, in a parole hearing for a sex offender, the department employee said, "Your grandma would probably be like, he ain't nothing but a hound dog, you know it?" The employee added that if the offender kept up the behavior, the offender might be placed in a sexually violent predator unit, which is run by the Department of Mental Health and holds patients indefinitely. In that case, the employee said the offender might as well learn the song Folsom Prison Blues. More laughing. As the Inspector General, asked by the Inspector General how incorporating words and song titles into the hearing helped determine risk and potential release, Ruzucka said, "Through the complete and thorough hearing process, we were able to determine the release date." "Why? Platypus?" Ruzucka said. "I guess if they were rare items he'd taken, and a platypus is a rare and unusual thing." "Why dress the same?" Ruzucka. "Why dress the same?" Ruzucka laughed, according to the report, and said, "Just another one of those things." Ruzucka told the Inspector General they played the game a few days and stopped. Asked by the Inspector General if all this sounded ridiculous, Ruzucka said, "Yes, like I said, it happened and it was over. Maybe that little check in here," he was pointing to his chest, "was to move on. We didn't discuss ending it. It just kind of ended." The investigative report says several employees were aware of the game being played by the duo and did not report it. A lawyer with the MacArthur Justice Center said the behavior potentially taints thousands of cases. "Who knows how many hearings were affected by this conduct," she said. "Even in hearings where literal games were not played, one has to question how seriously parole staff takes their duties. At least one family is outraged. Two weeks ago, Ruzucka was part of a parole hearing for Norman Brown, who was involved in a fatal robbery when he was 15. He's been in prison 28 years. Though he wasn't the shooter," said his attorney, "his parole was recently denied." "This does not sound fair. This does not sound fair, having hearings conducted by a man who sees people like my brother as means of entertainment," Brown's sister said at a news conference. "Imagine if this was your family, your father, your brother. Would you think this is right, appropriate, or just?" She and others at the news conference urged the governor to take action. "I'm pleading with you so that my brother can have a second chance, a fair chance." Mr. President, when I read that article over the weekend, and thank you to my colleagues for indulging me for a moment, when I read that article over the weekend, it was just disgusting. And I hope that those that were listening as I was reading that article were just as disgusted as I was. Now, the only good news, the only silver lining, is that I was just looking at my phone during the inquiry between the senator from Clay and the senator from the 7th. And from what I understand, the former representative, Ruzucka, has resigned from the Parole and Probation Board, which is one step in the right direction. I had some very good meetings during the confirmation process with the new directors. I had a very good meeting with the Director of Corrections, the new Department Director of Corrections, and I fault her nothing for this, just because she's new, and there were some questions I had. This is the type of stuff that I would like for her to look into. I'd like for somebody in the governor's staff somewhere to look into this. This is ridiculous. You're talking about people's lives, and you're playing games. You're playing word games. This is like Super Troopers. I don't know if any of you have seen Super Troopers. This is what this like. This is what a joke that hearing is with people's lives. And I don't know if people understand, but when a person is in jail, when they are in prison, it's not the person alone that is doing time. That person may have a brother, a sister, a father, children that don't get to see their relative. Did they do something wrong? Absolutely. Do a majority of them deserve to be there? Absolutely. Do they deserve a fair shake? Unquestionably. And to play these games before a person walks in the door, before they even sit down
to know exactly what they're going to do and find it so amusing is disgusting. It is disgusting. I will be looking into this. I will. Anybody that wants to look into it with me is more than happy to give me a call, come by my office. But I can tell you, I will be looking into this. I hope other people will be looking into this. I hope people higher up on the chain will be looking into this with me. Because this cannot happen. This needs to be further investigated, and it makes us look like a joke. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Buchanan.
Thank
you. You may proceed.
Thank you for bringing that issue forward, Senator. When I read that, I also was kind of enraged a little bit. I wonder, though, it takes two to play a word game like that. Who is the other person?
Well, in the article, as you've read as well as I do, it just says an employee, which is why with the resignation today, it shouldn't stop.
Well,
that shouldn't end the investigation. We should go find out who the other person is. We should go find out how many people there were. We should find out exactly when it started and when it and what has gone on in the meantime. Because it does. It taints thousands of cases, possibly.
Well, former Representative Ruzicka, you know, he was playing this word game, laughing about trying to get people to say a word. And it seems to me that it's obvious that there was somebody else on the
yes.
parole board that was doing it with them. And so, you know, it takes two to tango. And so I was kind of wondering who else was engaged in that and should they be resigning?
I would hope so.
The other thing that I was thinking, Senator, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I try to put things into perspective. And, you know, Representative Ruzicka, former Representative Ruzicka, parole board commissioner Ruzicka, he went and he sat there and he played this word game. It doesn't imply that he made a bad decision on anybody's future, but
it does imply he didn't take it seriously.
It does imply that he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, it implies he wasn't taking it seriously.
He wasn't taking it seriously, but, you know, I think about the great seal of Missouri giving his donor list or taking the donor list from a mission continues and using it and then telling the people of Missouri that he didn't and then getting caught and having to pay a fine because he did when he said he didn't. I mean, and so I try to compare and contrast, you know, like which is worse. Ruzicka, at least he resigned, you know. And then I think about the managed care, you know, the managed care piece. The Great Seal took a contribution from Centene. And then the managed care companies, in spite of many, many visits, I tried to explain to him, we still haven't even signed the bill that would pay them. We haven't signed that yet. The you know, right now they're getting paid and there's no appropriation because he hasn't signed the bill. And I'm thinking, you know, okay, not paying attention during, you know, the hearing. And then on the other hand, taking a dark money contribution could have been $1 million. Who knows how much the payoff was?
Could have been more.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of like, which is worse? But at least, you know, Ruzicka had the good sense to resign. And then I think about the word games that he plays, calling us career politicians. You know, Ruzicka plays a word game, platypus, you know, whatever. But the Great Seal of Missouri calls us career politicians. I mean, demeaning the Senate of
sure.
Missouri.
Senator, can I give you what I think the difference is?
Yeah.
I apologize for interrupting, but I don't know if you can draw comparisons in this situation because you get to come on this floor, you get to campaign, you get to talk to your constituents and tell them why he's wrong. You get to work through the appropriations process when you dislike managed care. You get to work through the appropriations process. There are remedies to some of your problems.
Yeah,
for some of these people in the parole,
except for the fact that we don't know how much money Centene gave.
I don't discredit that, but you get to ask the question. These people sitting in front of this parole board, more than likely, can't afford a great attorney.
Yeah, the people of Missouri can't either. The people of Missouri can't be.
We
they
pay
don't
for a pretty good attorney that's right
said,
across the street.
He said, I will make my donors public. I'm proud of my donors. I will make them public. And still, he won't. Sure. And so all I'm just saying is, like, let's compare and contrast. Yeah. I'm not diminishing the least your feeling about that. I'm just trying to get a little contrast here.
Absolutely.
Going to think about, you know, like, what's what? I mean, you know, if we're going to get all bent out of shape over the one, and that guy actually resigned out of, you know, goodness of his heart, or, you know, the
Well, I don't know if there's any goodness in his heart, but
he did
the right thing. After being exposed, he did what he was supposed to do, what he had to do.
Yeah, I mean, he at least did that, but, I mean, we can't even get the Great Seal of Missouri to tell how much Centene gave him for the big managed care contract that they all got.
Sure.
I mean, it's really just like, Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much for the inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Clay.
To inquire the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to an inquiry of Senator from Clay?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
I got an SJR here burning a hole in my pocket.
It's not what I wanted to ask you about, Senator. So we are now in this kind of weird space that happens in the Senate every once in a while where some negotiations start taking place off the floor. And we need to hold the floor to allow time for that to unfold.
Right.
So we need to make that sure that everybody's clear what's going on. This is not a filibuster.
Why not? Let's let them guess anything. Let them guess what we're doing. don't give away too much.
Hey, I'm not trying to blow up my my social media feeds here with people attacking me saying that I'm trying to derail the special session and kill the pro-life bill.
But you would adjourn, though, right?
I would adjourn, and I've said that in press. I would adjourn because I don't think it's extraordinary. However, where we are right now in the conversation that we're about to be engaged in, at least the conversation I'm about to engage you in, as I have the floor, I want everybody to be clear, we're allowing time for some negotiations to take place off the floor that will further the cause of this special session. Okay?
Okay.
All right. How about those Royals, man? They, in the last probably 2 or 3 weeks, have really turned it around. They're playing. Their offense is coming alive.
But is the glass half empty or half full? Because I would say that when you traded Wade Davis for Jorge Soler, who's now in the AAA, you basically raised the white flag saying that we're going to give up the best closer in baseball. We're not going to go back to the World Series and win it. So if you're going to do that, fine. But you've got 7 or 8 pieces on the team that you could move to get a bounty back for. And I think that as long as you keep, you know, this marginal winning going, then you're just prolonging and delaying. Now,
But as of right now, we have climbed out of the cellar in the division. We've been winning series. We won the San Diego series. We've been hitting a lot of home runs lately. Our offense has really come alive.
Yeah, but the bottom line is when you got $37 million tied up in a 176 hitter, and an 0-6. Hey, Kennedy didn't get the win the other night. Wood did.
Hey, I think that's right. But my point is, we're not in total meltdown mode right now. Like
we should be. Tank, man, tank it. Get the first round pick.
I think
sell all your assets.
I mean, you can see where we are at the All-Star break. See where we are.
All right, so we have a great run, and we end up 81-81 again.
Hey, look, we are 28-34.
Right.
Now, our friends on the other side of the state are 29-32. Okay, so slightly better.
Yep.
You don't hear them talking about a sell-off. At least I haven't heard any of them talking about a sell-off. Like,
well, how many games back are we? 4.5?
Let's see. We are 5.5 games back.
5.5 games back.
And we start a series tonight in San Francisco, and San Francisco is worse than we are.
Again,
San Francisco's got that short left porch.
Once you traded Wade Davis, to me,
that was a sign that you're not going for it this year.
The solar thing hasn't worked out. Solar has been very disappointing, no question. And Herrera has had some hiccups as a closer, no question. However, we're seeing more power out of Moustakas than we expected.
Yeah.
I mean, going into San Francisco right now, how many home runs does Moustakas hit in the next three games? You got that short right field fence. I mean, he could put one. Does he put one in the bay?
Two.
You think he puts two in the bay?
I think he puts two home runs out of the
bay. Two home runs in the next three games.
Yep.
And how do you think any of them get to the bay?
Who knows?
I don't know. Gordon now, who had this massive drought on his home run.
Terrible.
He's now hit two in the last, week? Something like that? So he's starting to turn around a little bit. Whit Merrifield has been great. He's been great in the middle infield. He had that hitting streak of, 19 games.
19 games, yeah.
I mean, that was...
The senator from the first, I noticed on one of his posts today, said that if the Cards sweep and the Cubs lose two, then they're in first place.
Well, because they're only 2.5 back, because the National League Central, against all odds, is worse than the American League Central as an entire division.
Yeah.
So their entire division, both of our divisions are terrible right now.
They are, which surprises me, because Cleveland is stacked. You look at that lineup with the pitchers they've got, I would have thought they would be 10 games over right now.
So the first place in the National League Central is 33-31. 33-31. They're the only one. No, Chicago is 31-31. So you have two teams that are even or above out of the division. And then when you look at our division, ours is 32-27, 31-29. So we only have two teams actually above water in our division, too. So both divisions are pretty terrible. But they're only 2.5 games back, and we're still 5.5 games back. But we're moving in the right direction. We're 6-4 in our last 10. We won our last two. You know?
I say sell it off.
Okay, so let's shift gears a minute, because I know you have strong feelings about this.
All right.
Jeremy Maclin was picked up by the Ravens.
Ah, terrible decision. Terrible decision.
By the Ravens.
You're 12-4 last year, and he has an off year, and if you look at his production, every other year he does well. He's gonna have 70 catches and 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns, and it's going to be like, that should have been for us.
But my understanding is it was a problem with cap space, right? And signing our draft picks, that we couldn't get our draft picks signed or something.
Well, I didn't get the full backstory on it. I just know that he had a down year last year. He does have a high cap number, and that they made that move for financial reasons. But who do we have? I mean,
you got Hill and
Kelsey.
Is it Conley?
Yeah,
is
Conley Conway.
Conley. Conley.
Chris Conley, I think.
I think it's Conley. I could be wrong.
But that's where pretty much.
I'm much more up on my Royals than my Chiefs.
Didn't we get a guy from Michigan in the draft, like in the 5th round, wide receiver?
We did get a wide receiver.
Maybe we like him enough that.
We also got a running back that could maybe be a wide receiver.
Yeah, where was he out of? Temple?
I don't remember.
Maybe? I don't remember either.
I didn't follow it quite that closely.
Have you got any, baseball signals from anybody that looks like we're getting close to...
Well, it kind of looks like we have a manager's conference on the mound going on in the back here, if we're going to go with those.
Right.
We're going to go with those illusions.
Well, will you talk to me about my SJR when I file it?
Well, certainly. I'll take an inquiry from any of my colleagues, just as the senator from Green said. So is this your SJR to go full-time?
Full-time. It goes.
You can talk about that. I mean,
right now, on any given session, which is the first Wednesday after the first Monday in January, to the Constitution says May 30th, but typically it's the second Friday in May. So that is where you are. That's going to give you 70 to 73 legislative days.
Okay.
Constitution says May 30th, you're done. And actually it sets out, so this year it was, the second Friday was, what did we end on? May, was it 15th?
Something like the 12th,
May 12th. Okay, so May 12th, we were done 6 o'clock on that Friday night. Constitutional mandated, we're done. And do you know why? Do you know why that's the case?
Because we're supposed to go home and live under the laws that we've passed?
Because we are supposed to be citizen legislators with private sector jobs. And it was a way to, just like the Hancock Amendment is a way to protect the citizens from excessive spending from the legislature, this was a way to protect the citizens from excessive regulatory lawmaking. So the citizens said, if you're there only part-time, you can't do so much damage. Some legislatures go every other year.
Right.
They don't even meet every year.
Yeah, and I think from a budgeting standpoint, I'm not a fan of that because I think it gives too much power to the executive when it comes to implementing the budget threat.
Well,
however, I would go for an every other year where you do the budget every year, but you could only do statutes in the off year. You know, I'd go for something like that.
So if you look up the...
Representative Fluke used to have an idea that we have annual session, but every even or odd, whichever one you picked, was a repeal session only. So you could add legislation in an even session, but you could only repeal legislation in the odd session because we have 28, 29 volumes of our statute books now.
So do you know the definition of extraordinary? It's an adjective.
It means
very unusual or remarkable. Very unusual or remarkable. Okay? And we've already established that court cases and city ordinances are neither very unusual or remarkable. Neither one of those things are very unusual or remarkable. So therefore...
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you aware of what the negotiation going on here is?
I knew what it was when you and I took the floor. Has it changed?
So my understanding is, and I think you were in here and you probably heard it, the senator from the second stood up and said, oh, this is being referred to as my bill, but it's not really my bill. If any other of my colleagues would like to carry this bill, I would gladly let them carry it. Do you remember him making that statement?
I heard him.
Yeah, well, apparently another one of our colleagues had asked to carry the bill, and that's what led to the negotiations, and now we're being told that that's no longer on the table, that the senator from the second is demanding to carry the bill.
He's demanding to carry the bill.
After he said, oh, I'll let any of my colleagues carry it.
So is that a
flip-flop? We killed all this time because we took, you know, another member of this chamber took him
at his word?
At face value.
Well, we've had problems before with doing that. We've learned our lesson about doing that. We should have known better when we came on this floor.
I'm really disappointed that we wasted all this time because a public statement was made on the floor of the Senate that is now not going to be upheld.
Well, let's ask him about it. Let's ask him.
You're welcome to. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th.
Can I inquire of the Senator from the 2nd?
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator, did you or did you not say any of your colleagues could carry this bill if they wanted to?
No, Senator. Yeah, and you probably heard of the rhetorical device of overstatement. The point was...
The point was that someone's got to tweet that, the rhetorical device of overstatement.
The point is that this bill is not about me. It's the cause of life. It's about reinstating sensible health and safety regulations to protect Missouri
women. So the senator from Green doesn't care about the cause of life?
No, it does. But honestly, between Senate Bill 67, which was my bill in regular session, its predecessor in 2016, and the time I've worked on this bill, honestly, I believe I am probably the best handler of this bill.
See, the funny thing is that it was the relationships that the senator from Cape actually has that made the opposition to this bill want to see something done because he cared so passionately about it. And my understanding is, during regular session, we had a deal on this bill, and that it was your involvement.
Why isn't that bill on the governor's desk right now?
Because of your involvement, Senator. Because your involvement cost
my involvement.
The agreement that we had here. And now what we're saying is...
I had nothing to do with Senate Bill 41,
Senator. So if you know...
If you know
that there, another handler of this bill would have a better time crafting better policy with help of the opposition, and you're saying, nope, it's got to be mine, after you just said that you didn't care who carried the bill.
Senator, my point was that this is not about me personally.
It is about you. We are here because of you.
No, Senator, we're here because the governor called us into special session. Did you read the call?
Yeah, it's unconstitutional.
It's not extraordinary. It is
not rare. It's not remarkable.
It is extraordinary. We had a final ruling striking down a major part of our law on May 2nd.
How about the student transfer bill? A judge struck down a student transfer bill a few years ago. That didn't bring us into special session. You know what?
I think in theory,
you yourself.
It could have.
You yourself said that when the gay marriage ban was struck down in the federal court case, Senator from the first, help me out, the court case that struck down the Burgerfeld. When that happened, I didn't hear you clamoring for a special session at that time.
Well, I didn't, but that was a Supreme Court.
But my point is that court cases change law all the time.
But in this case,
it's not extraordinary.
But in this case, it struck down a major section of our laws and our regulations that protect the health and safety of women by striking down
women,
our regulatory framework.
Most of the women I represent don't want you to help protect them.
Senator,
the women I represent know what's in the best interest of themselves.
Senator, like it or not, our laws, our regulations have fire regulations, infection control regulations, infection control regulations, a lot of regulations that are completely uncontroversial in any area of medicine that, yes, apply to abortion clinics as well as other healthcare facilities. The problem that Judge Sachs found with our law, citing Hellerstedt, is that we're regulating our clinics as ambulatory surgery care centers. We need to restore sensible health and safety regulations.
Do you agree with the Senator from Clay that whatever we produce here will have a lawsuit filed against it? I can tell you one thing right now. I'm going to file a constitutional objection to us being here, and that is going to end up in the court.
Senator, there are frequently lawsuits filed over bills in this area of the law, but I don't agree with the Senator from Clay that there will necessarily be an injunction. For instance, we passed bills in 2010. I don't believe any of that was ever enjoined. The Senator from Barry's 72-hour waiting period, that was never enjoined.
What are you going to do? Let me ask you
this.
What are you going to do if the Senator from Green files this legislation and the pro tem refuses to refer your bill and he refers the Senator from Green's bill and that's the vehicle that moves? You going to filibuster it?
Well, there's nothing I could do about that. But
all right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Clay.
To inquire of the Senator from the Second.
Senator from the Second, do you yield to the inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
Yes, I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'm interested a little bit in what was just went over. I heard you stand up and say, oh, everybody is calling this my bill. This is my bill. This is not my bill. I would be glad if any of my colleagues would like to carry this bill. I would gladly let them carry this bill.
Well, I'm not,
and my understanding
I'm not sure
is a colleague came to you and said, hey, guess what? I'd like to carry the bill. And now you're informing us, you're teaching us about, what did you say it was? The rhetorical device of overstatement?
Senator,
those are the words of a career politician right there. I may agree with Governor Greitens for the first time about career politicians in the Senate. When someone stands up, walks back a statement as black and white as I would let anyone else carry the bill, and then go, well, that was just the rhetorical device of overstatement. So please enlighten me about the rhetorical device of overstatement.
Look, this is what I said or meant to say. This bill is not about me. This bill is about
the... Then why won't the Senator from Green carry it?
You know, quite frankly, I've worked on components of this bill now for... This is the third year.
So it is about you?
That part has been my bill, and I feel most comfortable with myself as the handler of that. Of course, I've worked with the Senator from St. Genevieve and and he and I'm sorry, from Cape, and he you know, and he, I think he is okay with me carrying this part of the bill. I've spoken to the senator from the 15th. He has a component of the bill, and he is good with me carrying his part of the bill. So,
what do you mean? Is he filing a separate bill, the senator from the 15th?
He is. He would like to file a separate, his bill as a separate bill.
Is it also going to be included in your bill?
It
or are
is.
We moving multiple bills now?
It is. It's going to be included in my bill.
It's going to be included in your bill. So you're envisioning that we pass one bill with your name on it and have a big rally with you on stage.
No,
that,
actually,
is that how this ends?
Actually, I
if I fast forward to the end,
actually,
is that what
actually
happens?
Actually, I have seven co-sponsors right now, so it'll have a number of names on it.
It'll have well,
and,
sure.
And it could have your name on it. You're welcome to co-sponsor as well.
Well, I'd offer to carry it, but I don't think you'd let me. So here's what I want to know. If you stand up on the floor of the Senate and you make a statement, and then you walk it back 100%, and then you say, well, that was the rhetorical device of overstatement, and then you tell us, I don't think that this is going to have an injunction placed on it, how do I know that that's not the rhetorical device of overstatement?
Well, again, we've had a number of pro-life bills passed over the last decade or so.
Which I've voted for, all of them.
And No, I know that. And some elements of some of them have been enjoined, but many of them have resulted in lawsuits, but few have been enjoined. And no, I don't think there's any reason to assume that this is going to get enjoined.
But I don't think that really answers my question of how do we know when you're using the rhetorical device of overstatement?
No, Senator, the point was that this bill is not about me. It's about the cause. It's about restoring sensible health and safety regulations.
So you don't think the senator from Green could do the job? You don't think the senator from Green could get this bill passed?
I think the senator from Green is very knowledgeable. He's an excellent senator. He's a valued colleague. I think
but
I
he
know,
just can't handle
I think
bill.
I think I know the bill. I think I know the bill best.
I seem to remember last year you asked for the Highway Patrol to go retrieve one of our fellow senators in the middle of the night. Was that also a rhetorical use of overstatement?
I don't remember the details of that, Senator.
You don't remember the details? Yeah. It's on tape on the Secretary of State's website. You can go listen to it. You ordered the Highway Patrol to go retrieve another senator from St. Louis when she wasn't in the chamber, and then pretended the next day that it didn't happen. So is that a rhetorical?
I believe the word I used is summon, and just like the doorman summons people when they're within the building, outside the building, someone else would summon the person. So no, I don't think the word retrieve was not used.
I'm just super intrigued by this whole new concept because I did academic debate for 7 years. I have a degree in speech. I took many, many classes in rhetoric and public address. And this concept of the rhetorical device of overstatement is something new to me.
The word is hyperbole.
So let me ask you a couple other things. So let's see. Nothing is politically right that is morally wrong. Is that rhetorical overstatement, or is that true?
I think that's true.
You think that's true? How about free and fair discussion will ever be found the firmest friend of truth? Is that rhetorical overstatement, or is that also true?
I think that's true.
If that's true, why have you voted for so many previous question motions?
I'm sorry?
Well, if free and fair discussion will ever be found the firmest friend of truth, then why have you voted to cut off free and fair discussion so many times?
Look, I think the previous question motion is a counterbalance to the filibuster, and I think that sometimes the body needs to move on and do the will of the people and to get to a vote.
So that's an overstatement. It's not really the firmest friend of truth. It's maybe a friend of truth. I mean, firmest is pretty solid.
That's
not firmer, or it's not pretty good friend of truth. It's firmest. So should we change the wall? What word would fit better there? Free and fair discussion will ever be found somewhat helpful occasionally to the truth. How about that? Would that fit more accurately with your interpretation?
No, I think free and fair discussion is good. But after 12 hours when someone's discussing baseball at 2 in the morning, you know, you never know.
But that's free discussion. Free to discuss whatever we want. I thought we were fans of freedom in this chamber.
I don't see the word endless. I don't see the word dilatory.
You don't see the word free? It's the very first word.
I don't see the word endless or dilatory or infinite. I just see free and fair.
I see. Well, maybe we need to develop a signal. Can we, you know, like in baseball, since I love baseball, and we talk about baseball out here quite a bit, base coaches give us a signal sometimes, like if they're going to steal, like they tap their chest or they rub their cap. So can we develop a signal that you can give the other members of the chamber when you're utilizing the rhetorical device of overstatement so we know what you mean when you mean it and what you're really just saying because it makes a better soundbite? Is there
Senator,
some way? I mean,
Senator,
how
Senator,
am I supposed
Senator,
to take
Senator,
you at your
Senator,
word? I guess
Senator,
that's what I'm getting at.
Senator, I don't follow you. But
you don't follow me. Okay. Yeah. So you stood on the floor and you said, this is not my bill. If any other member would like to carry this bill, I'd be happy to let them do so.
Yeah.
And now another member said they would like to carry the bill. And now you've come to the floor and you've said, nope, I didn't really mean that. That was the rhetorical device of overstatement. So as members chamber, we rely on each
again,
other.
We rely on
the relationships that we have, and we rely on the words that are said. And so what I'm asking you is, how am I to know in the future when you are utilizing the rhetorical device of overstatement as opposed to telling the truth as you mean it?
Senator, in that discussion, that inquiry with the senator from Buchanan, I immediately said what I meant by that. What I meant by that is this bill's not about me. This is about the issue of restoring common sense health and safety regulations to protect Missouri women.
This is perfect to explain how it's not about you. If the bill could pass with another member handling the bill, then you have protected life. You have gotten the words into statute that you want. You have been on stage at the rally. You will be on stage at the next rally. So what in the world is the problem with letting another member handle the bill? Apparently you're telling us that no other member in this chamber can handle this bill.
You know, look, any member can file any bill they want. The senator from Green can file the bill if he'd like. You could file the same bill.
So, but I think the discussion was, you said you didn't need to file the bill. So why are we not
letting... I don't think we got into that much detail with the senator from Buchanan.
Okay, so I'm not...
Do you think that you handling the bill
will result in a previous question being moved?
I'm sorry?
Do you think that if you handle this bill, that a previous question will be moved?
I hope that's not necessary, Senator.
Well, I would hope it's not necessary, too, but that's not been your track record.
Well, Senator...
I think that's the concern that several people have.
So only one of my bills has been... Previous question.
Well, another one would have been had the first previous question at the end of session not been such a train wreck. I mean, you were going to move the previous question on another one of your bills, if I remember correctly. This one, probably, if I remember right. Weren't you seeking signatures to move the previous question on this bill?
I'm sorry?
The abortion-related bill you had on the last day of session, were you or were you not seeking signatures to move the previous question?
I didn't have an abortion-related bill the last day of session.
So you didn't have an abortion bill during session, but now you're the only one...
I did have an abortion bill during session. It was on the floor April 10th, I believe, and...
But that's not the one that we... That's not the one we could have passed. But that's not the one we were going
to
pass on the last day?
No, that wasn't the bill.
So you couldn't get it passed during regular session, but you're the only member of this chamber that can get it passed during special session. But it's not about you.
No, so Senator, this bill, that you've read the call, but I don't expect you to be familiar with Senate Bill 67. This bill's call and Senate Bill 67 are very different bills.
Okay.
I mean, you can go through line item by line item. There are different components to it.
Right. I know that there were other fetal tissue aspects to the bill that you had filed and so forth. I guess what I'm just trying to understand is, why is it that you're the only person qualified to handle this bill? and that you would make a statement that it's not about you, but now it has to be all about
you. Again, anyone or everyone in this chamber is welcome to file this bill. I guess ultimately it will be up to our caucus to decide who handles this bill.
Okay, Mr. President.
Senator from Clay.
May I inquire of the Senator from Green?
Senator from Green. Senator from Green, do you yield to an inquiry of the Senator from Clay?
I do.
May I proceed?
Thank you, Senator. So I understand that you had entered into discussions about carrying the bill, whatever the bill for the pro-life session would be, after the Senator from the 2nd made the statement that it wasn't about him and anyone could file this bill. Now we're told that that was the quote-unquote rhetorical device of overstatement and that he didn't really mean that when he said it. But he has just told us that, of course, you would know that any senator has the right to file any bill in this chamber. So I guess what I'm asking is, will you be filing a version of this for us to discuss in the special session? Because I would hate for you to be deterred by the senator from 2nd walking back his commitment.
Well, let me say a few things. It is true that we did have a private conversation, which I appreciate the ability to do in this chamber. I was not on the floor when I heard the statement that that you mentioned, actually either of the statements that you mentioned, about who would handle it or who would not handle it. But to be direct to the other question that you answered or you asked, yes, I was solicited by some members to file a bill, and I'm intending to do that. It's being drafted now. I had no intention of filing a bill, so I didn't have anything prepared. But as everyone in this chamber knows, I am pro-life. Quite frankly, I'm very torn about this special session because I believe it's a very good cause. I do not like, nor do I appreciate, the political shenanigans, some of which I would liken to hogwash. That's a good old Southwest Missouri term. Now, I have just gone and talked to the staff, the research staff, and I have asked them if they would please draft a bill that I could file today. We're about to go to the order of business of introduction of bills.
Correct.
And the staff, you know, we have wonderful staff here. They are working tirelessly to get us something, because if I wait until tomorrow, then it will cost the taxpayer more money.
Right.
You and the rest of our colleagues will have to be here an extra day if we were to even do the bill that I introduced. But if I don't do it, it's not an option.
Right.
So I'm going to just put it out there as an option.
Well, Senator, I know that you have a great deal of respect in this chamber and that members would ask you to carry the bill. I'm understanding some members have asked you to carry the bill because you have a reputation of working well with others, of not being completely inflexible about things. And I think that I would like to encourage you to get that bill drafted and filed so that we have an opportunity at a path that perhaps does not lead us into a brick wall resulting in a previous question motion. Because I'm not confident that every other bill that's filed today would be able to be negotiated in good faith without the previous question being moved.
Let me say this. I have the utmost appreciation for the work that has been done on this bill by the Senator from the 2nd as well as the Senator from Cape and others. And I honor that tremendous amount of work. I would work with every member if I was asked to do this, and to just again confirm, there were several that came to me, and it was spur of the moment here, so this was a surprise to me.
Senator,
I'm happy to do it. I will file something that could be used if we decide to go down that road.
Senator, you are in your final term. Next year is your final year, correct?
Yes, I will be. Let me just say this. I will be going back to 100% employment in the private sector.
Right. So I am unaware of any political aspiration that you have beyond this, and that's not to say you don't or that you wouldn't in the future.
I have absolutely
no plans. But I am unaware
no
of you. You're not seeking re-election.
That's correct.
You're not potentially looking at running for Congress. You're not looking at running statewide. So I think that you would be the perfect fit in this super political environment to show that we are more concerned with protecting life than scoring political points. And I would certainly hope that you get your bill drafted and are able to get it turned in.
Thank you for your
comments. How much more time do you need, Senator? Because I'm willing to help with this however long it takes.
The research staff just walked out the door with my chief of staff. I want to make sure that what we start with is something that I absolutely want to remain in there because, as you know, constitutionally, something from the original bill must be in the final bill that's signed by the governor.
Sure.
So I want it to be something that is absolutely not going to be a negotiation point. I gave my word to the senator from the second that I would work very closely with him. I will work closely with everyone if I'm asked to do this. I'm going to file the bill, and then I'll leave it to my colleagues.
Well, and I know that you will do that, Senator, and that's why I'm very hopeful that you will end up carrying the bill that we get to debate on the floor.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan. Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry to Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
You may proceed.
You know, I was wanting to...
I'm just kidding, Senator. That was a rhetorical use of overstatement. I'm not really going to yield.
Okay. Well,
I'm kidding. That was actually a rhetorical use of overstatement. Proceed with your inquiry.
Well, now I'm just not sure that I even want to inquire of you. Wait, that was a rhetorical use of overstatement. I really do. But I just have to tell you that I think that when you say something that is in the future, like, I'd be willing to let anybody else in the room handle this bill, that technically that's not the rhetorical use of overstatement. I don't think it is. I think it's like, this is huge. I mean, that's the rhetorical use. Or like, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse.
Remember Representative Pratt? And the greatest ethics bill in the history of the universe that we passed several years ago, that would fall in line as the rhetorical use of overstatement.
Yes. But
as an adjective describing something that exists.
Yes, the greatest ethics bill in the history of the universe. Well, you know, I guess if a guy is in the foxhole and there's bombs going around and he says, "Dear God, if you'll help me get out of this, I'll become a priest." You know, nobody kind of expects you to be held to that. That's kind of the sort of a similar where you're kind of like promising something in the future and you're saying something in the future and you always have your ability to change your mind.
You know, what another common way of putting that is, don't let your mouth write checks that some other part of you can't cash.
Well, the thing is that if you say, "I am willing to let somebody else handle the bill," 5 minutes go by, and then you're not willing, it doesn't imply that you didn't tell the truth about a future action that you changed your mind about. But there are things that where if it was a past action, where if you say it, then it's done. There's no opportunity to walk that back. Like, for example, we're proud of our contributors, and you know, I mean, I guess that would be the future case. We're proud of our contributors, and we will release all of their names, like the Great Seal of Missouri said. But as far as like the past goes, he says, "We didn't use the donor list of the mission continues." That one, I guess, could that be the rhetorical use of overstatement? I don't know, because he later admitted that he did. He kind of overstated his ethicalness by saying that he didn't, and then he kind of walked it back.
I mean, like I said, I don't remember being taught about the rhetorical use of overstatement in any of my speech classes or rhetoric classes through college. But it seems to me like it could be a catch-all for any time you didn't really mean something that you said.
I know, but see, that, you know, any time you're in court and it would totally negate perjury.
You know what? If I'm ever in that situation, I will see what the judge has to say about the rhetorical use of overstatement.
I think it would, in this case, it was more of a rhetorical risky ploy.
Could you imagine getting cross-examined by counsel? And you're like, no, Your Honor, that was the rhetorical use of overstatement when I said that. I didn't. You think he would let it slide?
Well, I mean, do we need to... Does the senator from Green need more time to get his work done, or?
I don't see the senator from Green, so I'm going to say yes.
Okay. Well, you know, the Great Seal of Missouri said during his inaugural speech, he said, "Those who would come to the people's house for their own selfish gains, hear me now." You remember that?
I do. And that could be political or monetary, right?
Yeah. And yet, I think about the special interests that I think that was what he was saying there was the rhetorical use of overstatement. Because he really didn't mean it. You know, just like he really didn't mean it when he said he would disclose all of his donors. Now, it's a First Amendment thing with him. He suddenly decided that you don't have to disclose your donors, that dark money is perfectly okay. Heck, we might as well get rid of the Ethics Commission. There are 33 people working there. It'd save us a lot of money. I mean, why disclose? If you can just write a check to the 501c4 instead of the campaign committee, why not just write it to the 501c4?
I mean, you would think. You were here in 2007 when we voted to eliminate the contribution limits.
That was a mistake.
So the justification, whether or not you think it was a mistake or the right thing to do, the justification at the time, and this was for our entire party, and it actually we ended up with at least one Democrat vote on the override of the veto. So the justification for that entire exercise was to inject transparency into who's giving money to who. Because we had that situation, and I've talked about this several times since then, but you may remember in the election of 06, we had someone in the state, and maybe more than one person in the state, who set up multiple PACs and then funded them themselves, and then multiple PACs were writing checks to people. So I was a recipient of that, and I've let everybody know that in the media and in interviews since then. There were, if I remember correctly, and you'd have to go back and look, but if I remember correctly, on one instance, I received, at that time, an envelope with 84 or 86 checks for the maximum contribution, all from 84 or 86 different committees, all completely legal, that all came from one person ultimately because they were the only person that gave to those 86 committees. So I go back and I do my ethics report, and there's my 86 checks for whatever, and it's this committee out of, you know, Northwest Missouri, and this committee for good government, and this committee for happy teachers, and whatever it was. And I wasn't the only person. I mean, that happened all over the state, that cycle. Everybody, that multiple people received contributions in that manner. And we all came back the next year, and we were like, this is really silly. We're not stopping any of the money. The money is getting to us in a legally laundered way where no one who pulls the ethics reports can tell that's what had happened. They just see a bunch of different political action committees. And we thought, that's really silly. So let's just get rid of the limits so people can see. If one person wants to give me 30 grand, then they can do it in one check with their name on it, not 86 different checks with 86 different made-up names on it. That was the whole justification. Now here we are, a decade later, with a new head of the party, and we've completely gone the other direction. Now it's, we shouldn't let anybody know who's giving, because it's their First Amendment right to be anonymous. In just the short space of a decade, the same party being led by in two different directions. It's just mind-blowing to me that, and many people, because of term limits, have turned over. A lot of people are not here who took that vote in 2007. You and I are one of the few dinosaurs left, a few of our colleagues in here that were there to take that vote. So others probably don't feel as personally connected to that, but my mind hasn't changed in the last decade. I still think that transparency is the key to accountability in our political system.
Well, my question is, which one is the rhetorical device of overstatement? It is our First Amendment right, and I believe in dark money, or I'm proud of our contributors, and they're there for everybody to see. I mean, one of them has to be the rhetorical device of overstatement, but you don't know which one. Is it the most recent statement?
Well, that's why I think we need a signal, Senator. That's why when I was talking to the senator from the second, we need a signal. So I don't know if I should, you know, do like base stealing signs, right? Like maybe I touch my, or maybe I, okay.
This is the rhetorical device right
here.
Yeah,
this is what we need, an indicator sign, and then the next sign after that says what's coming up. I don't really mean, I'm just going to say it because it sounds good.
Well, you know, if you had the ability to look close at a person, you could probably detect it without actually using your hands. You'd see your skin conductivity, the shininess on your face. They say that your nose pulses red, and you can see the pulse in your nose, and your ears turn red, and a whole bunch of different things when you use the rhetorical device of overstatement occur. Your pulse goes up, your skin conductance, different things.
Yeah, I mean, they have machines that detect that, right? I mean, they're not admissible in court.
They call them rhetorical device of overstatement detectors.
Detectors. Nice. Yeah. So, hey, so do they teach classes at the CIA on how to defeat the rhetorical device of overstatement detector?
They probably do. I don't know.
They probably do. Well, hey, through the wonders of technology, I've been informed by the senator from Green that he does, in fact, still need more time.
He does.
He does. Okay.
Well, you know, I was thinking that if it's very possible that we could go without a quorum, maybe we could just, like, take a break for a while and then come back to this later. We could all go get some supper. Because I was told that at 6 o'clock, you know, somebody, out of the goodness of their heart, is providing a free dinner for all of the senators.
Really? Yeah, I mean, we could recess and come back, or, I mean, if we're that close, if we're like 10 minutes away, that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense probably, but if it's going to be like another hour, I would think that, you know, maybe speaking with the floor leader about recessing and coming back at a time to introduce bills might be a good idea. I don't see him in here, though, so we'd have to inquire of him to get him in here. I think you have the floor, but sit next to the president pro tem. Maybe you could ask him over your shoulder if he thinks that's a good idea. Because I think it's clear, right? It's clear that we're going to have more than one bill introduced today, whether it means that we're going to stand here and talk until it gets drafted or whether we go get some dinner and come back. So I don't think it's nefarious for us to take a break and come back to
introduce
bills.
I have three bills to introduce.
You have three?
Yeah, three.
Yeah, I came wholly unprepared for this extraordinary session because nothing seemed extraordinary to me.
The first bill would be a gift ban because I think that probably more people in Missouri want us to do ethics reform than, you know, want us to do the reason that we're here, the abortion thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of a universal among all Missourians. They think that we really shouldn't receive gifts, like free meals, you know. But actually, I think I'm going to be getting $113 today. I was thinking about my per diem, and I already spent $5, $4.96 or something like that, at Taco John's in Blue Springs to get a couple of bean burritos with cheese.
Okay.
And so I've already used up $5 of my $113. And so, you know, I'd really be thankful for the free dinner, though, because then I can save my $108 you know, and not have to spend it for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, again, and I've said this earlier and multiple times, I mean, I think that there's nothing that we're going to be handling here, regardless of who files the bill or who handles the bill, that we couldn't do in January and be in pretty much exactly the same place.
Right, but you know...
Just spend the regular amount of money to defend...
You know that at the end of this call... number 15 is such additional and other matters as may be recommended by the Great Seal of Missouri by special message to the General Assembly after it shall have convened. So the deal is that since he has the ability to add on ethics reform, I want to be ready. I want to have it out there on the calendar because he could decide to, you know, actually do the will of the people of Missouri and get that issue on the table.
Well, you know, Senator, we actually have precedent for passing bills not part of the call, and then the governor amending his call before the session ended so that he could sign those bills. Do you remember doing that?
Yeah, I kind of do remember that.
We did do that. We did it in, I believe it was part of the Manufacturing Jobs Act, and we added some data center language that was not part of the call. And then the governor amended his call to include the data center language before he signed it, making it constitutional. In that same session, I filed a bill because it was in the wake of the Joplin tornado, and the governor was refusing to use the supplemental budget fund, the emergency rainy day fund, for the tornado assistance. And I felt that that was the appropriate place to use the appropriations for an emergency such as that. So I filed a bill in the House to make appropriation out of that fund, the reserve budget fund, to pay for some of the Joplin tornado damage. It passed out of the House, and then the Senate never picked it up because the governor didn't amend his call. So we have multiple precedents, even since you and I have been in the chamber, of moving bills that have nothing to do with the call, in the hope and anticipation that the call would match the bill before it was done.
Well, then, in that case, we could go ahead and pass this gift ban bill, and then the governor could amend his call after we did it and say, hey, since the work's already done, I'll just amend my call, and we'll have a gift ban. That would work.
That would work. He could totally do that.
My second bill is the Revolving Door Reform Act. And instead of a six-month revolving door, it would be a two-year revolving door.
Three senators standing, Senator from the 7th.
Point of order.
State your point.
How did the senator from 2nd get from his chair to where he is standing with the senator from the 34th and the senator from the 17th engaged in debate?
Is there a point of order to be stated?
I'm asking you the question.
That's not a point of order, Senator.
My point of order is the senator from the 2nd broke the line of debate between two debaters and should be reprimanded by a very observant President Pro Tem.
Would you like me to refer that to the President Pro Tem?
I withdraw my point of order.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator, I was about to speak in favor of the point of order, saying it was the single most egregious violation of any of the rules that I've ever seen in my tenure here in the legislature. But I think you know that that would have been a rhetorical overstatement.
I think that was an egregious device of egress.
It was an egregious device of egress.
What he did there.
I won't walk that one back. You're right. It was egregious.
It was definitely he egressed egregiously there. Anyway, my third bill would outlaw the dark money. It's the one that would require the governor... He can take all the money that he wants from Centene and everybody else who wants to give him money, you know, Uber, whoever.
It could be Iran,
we have no idea.
For all we know.
We have no idea. I mean, every time he pushes for a bill, I mean, how do we know how many millions he's taken?
You know, Qatar just hired former Governor John Ashcroft to defend them in this PR battle that they have going now about whether or not that they are friendly to terrorists. You know, we had another donor to the governor's dark money committee say that they were trying to build a relationship with him. So how do we know that Qatar's not trying to give money to the governor so that they have a good relationship with the governor of Missouri?
Well, the thing is that we don't know how much money he's getting. But under my bill, we would know, but he could still take it. I mean, it doesn't stop him from getting the money. It just would tell...
the people of Missouri exactly who's giving him the money.
You know what's interesting? And I was making a joke when I said that, but I actually kind of raised an interesting point to myself. When I said Iran could be giving money, and I'm thinking like North Korea, Kim Jong-un could be giving money to the Dark Money Committee, what's interesting is we actually have laws against foreign governments giving money to political campaigns. But there's no law keeping a foreign government from giving money to that nonprofit.
Well,
so literally, a foreign government could be giving money to that nonprofit, and we would never know, and it would be going for political purposes, circumventing the prohibition on foreign governments and elections.
Is the Indian nation that gave a new Missouri the check, the 57,000 or whatever it was, are they a foreign government? I don't know.
Legally, I don't know. I think they're sovereign, but I don't know if they're considered foreign. I'm not a lawyer.
Well,
to know the difference.
I mean,
there. You
remember the steel mill came from India, and you don't have any idea whether the steel mill people gave a new Missouri, you know, $1 million to build. You know, they obviously have lots of money. They're going to put in like $50 million for this steel mill. I mean, it would be kind of interesting to know for sure whether or not the steel mill from India gave the Great Seal of Missouri's Secret Dark Money Committee, a new Missouri, $1 million. I mean, if they did, the people of Missouri might raise their eyebrows, for sure.
Well, and I think that's why Justice Scalia said what he said in that decision about how transparency is the only hope for our democracy when it comes to political spending.
Right.
Because
I mean,
we have the whole controversy going on at the federal level now about whether or not Russia was involved in our federal election, and whether you believe they were or believe they weren't, it is controversial.
It is.
And if they could give, if the Russian government could give money directly to a nonprofit that could then in turn spend that money politically on behalf of someone, we should know that.
Well, you know, it has the appearance of impropriety when these things happen.
I
was sitting in the inauguration.
It curves.
And
here.
I was sitting in the inauguration and I opened up my program and it said that Centene was one of the contributors. So I kept that, you know, Centene contributed. Don't know how much. He won't
say.
Yeah,
we don't know how much.
Centene. And then we go and we give Centene one of the contracts for the managed care expansion, which was, you know, like almost $1 billion. And by the way, you know, the funny business that went about the budgeting on that was really disgusting. They budgeted as if they're going to save $20 million by redoing the contracts. But Greitens' secretary or, you know, head of the department says they're not planning to do that at all. So obviously they knew that all along, but never corrected it. And withholding information that's important for making a budgetary decision is just as bad as using the rhetorical device of overstatement.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, I think that bill is important and one that I would hope that the governor would like to see addressed as well. Although, given his actions and given you know, some of the debate that we saw on the floor before, I don't hold a lot of hope that he will support that legislation or add it to his call.
Well, you know, when I personally get called a greedy, self-serving career politician, and I think, what have I done to deserve that? You know, all I've done is basically try to point out the potential corruption that I see and try to shine the light on it and put a stop to it. I mean, I'm not going to gain anything by pointing out corruption that I see. I'm not, like, self-aggrandizing, nor am I trying to feather my own nest. I'm not running for anything. I'm kind of like the senator from Green. I don't even have a campaign committee. Like, I'm not planning to run for anything. I'm going to just go home and be a doctor.
Yeah, it's amazing all of the career politicians in here that are you know, seemingly devoid of political motive, not running for anything else, term limited.
Yeah, I, you know, I heard a long time ago that that he bought the website ericgreitensforpresident.com
7 years before he ever ran for office. He has owned ericgreitensforpresident.com longer than I have been a senator.
Yeah. And so you've got to ask yourself, does this explain what you're seeing?
Do you own yournameforpresident.com?
No.
I don't own mynameforpresident.com either.
Well, you remember when A New Missouri had the bus bring all the people and provided the lunch?
I mean, I do. Yeah, I do. I do.
Weren't they acting as a political committee when they did that? They expended money on...
No, what's interesting, if you look at the C4 regulations handed down by the IRS, they're allowed to spend money on lobbying. A C4 can have a lobbyist. You can lobby on behalf of a C4. So now you have all the questions like what you're talking about, bringing people in to advocate for a position, papering the walls, leading the march, doing auto calls. I know the senator from Butler had phone calls into his district with the governor's voice, urging a specific political position. To me, there is no question that that is lobbying activity, which is perfectly legal and perfectly fine in the confines of a C4. However, you need to register.
Yeah,
you need to register to lobby if you're going to lobby us.
Is there any requirement against coordination between a C4 and the elected official? I don't think there is.
I don't think there is either. I don't know for sure, but I don't think there is.
Well, I mean, when your chief of staff...
Now, if they're coordinating with your official campaign... they would be constrained by the $2,600 new constitutional limit, right? So if it was an in-kind contribution, once they exceeded $2,600, if you're coordinating, you'd be in violation of the law.
Well, as I recall, I received text messages that came from, I'm pretty sure it was Eric Greitens for Missouri, you know, was the, you know, the...
it was Greitens for Missouri, not Greitens for President.
Yeah, Greitens for Missouri... Yeah, it was his, you know, campaign committee. And then I read that, it was reported that A New Missouri actually, you know, paid for the buses and the food. Well, the email from Greitens for Missouri was telling about where the buses would pick you up and so on. So isn't that kind of coordination?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly coordination. I mean,
well, I mean,
how else would they get the governor to the rally?
Right. Well, it's, in my opinion, you know, it's pretty obvious that there was coordination. I just don't know whether it's legal or illegal.
Yeah,
I must just assume that it was legal.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, unless there's some investigation that would say otherwise. I'm being told by the senator from Cole that there's some other perfunctory things that we could be doing, that the bill is close enough to being filed, that whenever you're ready to end your inquiry, we can proceed,
now that
but
I have
certainly
that
you have the floor, so.
I think I will. Wait. That was the rhetorical device of overstatement.
You're not quite ready.
Okay, now I really am ready.
Now you're ready? Give me the sign.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the first.
Thank you, Mr. President. To speak on the motion?
You may proceed.
Mr. President, I strongly support the senator from Newton's motion, and I think we ought to pass it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Seeing none, Senator from Newton, you're recognized to close.
Close.
Senator from Newton has renewed his motion. You've heard the motion of the senator from Newton. All those in favor of the opinion that motion shall prevail signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you call the calendar, Mr. President? Introduction of guests, I believe, is next.
Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 7th, for what reason do you rise?
We were just on the order of business number 4, resolutions. Introduction of guests would be number 2. So we would have to go back in that order. The next order of business is concurrent resolutions number 5.
Your point of order will be referred to the President pro tem.
I withdraw my point of order, but I ask that we go to the correct order of business.
Your point of order is withdrawn.
Mr. President,
we good? So we will continue to be on the order of business of introduction of special guests. Introduction of special guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 2nd, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send your bill forward. Has your bill been distributed?
It has not been distributed.
My apologies. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill No. 1, offered by Senator Onder et al., an act relating to abortion.
Senator, you care to explain the bill?
No explanation necessary.
Senator from the 7th, what reason you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send the bill forward. Has it been distributed? Madam Secretary, when the bill reaches you, please read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution No. 1, offered by Senator Holzman, a joint resolution relating to the time periods of the legislative sessions of the General Assembly.
Senator, do you care to explain your bill?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. President. I will not belabor the point long because the Senator from Clay and I had a chance to preview the bill in our inquiry. I believe that we are right now unconstitutionally seated. I believe that this is an unconstitutional session. The only thing that isn't within the Constitution, you have two choices. You can adjourn, which would be constitutional, or you can vote to amend the Constitution, which then allows us to be here if the voters support it. So what I have done is I have offered a joint resolution to send to the voters to ask them if they want us to be here. And if they vote yes, then it will change the number of days from 70 to 73, depending on holidays and in particular how the dates fall, to 180 legislative days. The new legislative end date will be December 20th, not May 30th. Then, at that point, if we are here during the summer, if we are here during the fall, we are no longer citizen legislators. We are no longer expected to have private sector employment as we are now. And we will no longer be in violation of the Constitution, as I believe we are right now. Send it to the vote of the people. Let them decide if they want to spend their tax dollars on making us a full-time legislature. Then we will be supporting the oath of our Constitution. Until then, and unless we do that, we will be in violation of it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator Buchanan, what reason your eyes?
I have the first of three bills.
Senator Bill Ford. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 2, offered by Senator Schaaf, an act relating to lobbyists.
Care to explain your bill, Senator?
Mr. President, Senate Bill 2 is identical to Senate Bill 2 during the regular session, and it would establish a real gift ban. And it has been said by our governor that he wants us to pass a gift ban. And he put in his call that we could take up such additional and other matters as may be recommended by the governor by special message to the General Assembly after it shall have convened. And so if he's listening, I say, Governor, we've got the bill out there. Why don't you amend your call and we'll pick it up and we'll have a real gift ban. Unfortunately, my bill didn't get a hearing during the regular session, and so it probably won't get a hearing now. I have another bill.
Send your bill forward, Senator. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 3, offered by Senator Schaaf, an act relating to the waiting period before certain public officials can become lobbyists.
Senator, care to explain your bill?
Yes, I do, Mr. President. Senate Bill 3 is the same as Senate Bill 3 during the regular session. It would create a 2-year prohibition against lobbying once that you've finished serving in the legislature. Our esteemed governor has said that he wants that it's really important. So I say, once again, if you're going to call a special session later on to address ethics, don't waste the taxpayers' money. Do it now. Pick up Senate Bills 2 and 3 and save us $100,000 worth of money, Governor. My bill never got a hearing, so I don't expect it to get one this time, but there is always hope. And I have a third bill.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 4, offered by Senator Schaaf. An act relating to financial disclosure under campaign finance laws.
Senator, you care to explain your bill?
Yes, I do, Mr. President. This is the Dark Money Disclosure Act. This is the bill that took a lot of work during the session to get to be discussed on the Senate floor. And we never got to a vote for it, mainly because of the work of the senator from the second, who just didn't want us to get a chance to vote on that. And I know that the special session is important to the senator from the second. I know that the issue of abortion is important to him, and it's also important to me. I support whatever bill comes out. But his bill, at least, it was before us during the regular session. He could have had a vote on it, but he denied me having a vote on this one. So I would hope that if the governor expands his session, his call for this session, that the senator from the second would let my bill actually have a vote. Thank you.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of the senator from the 15th District, I have a bill.
Send the bill forward.
No explanation needed, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 5, offered by Senator Koenig. An act relating to the jurisdiction of the Attorney General to enforce state abortion laws.
Introduction of bills. Senator McColl.
Can I inquire of the Senator from Lewis County?
Senator from Lewis, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Senator.
Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
I know we're on a very important order of business, but I wanted to find out something that has to do with your industry and your livelihood.
I have no bills, except bills waiting for me back home to probably be paid when I get there.
Oh, boy, I forgot about those. Do you have any rain? That was my question.
Rain. No, I have not had rain in about 4.5 weeks.
Well, that's a problem. So you should have introduced a bill requiring rain up in northeast Missouri.
You know, Senator, I've been down here 15 years, and I don't really think that works. We've talked about it before.
You mean you can't legislate rain?
I don't think that works. I think by looking to the good Lord above, hopefully he will provide what we need to have a bountiful crop this year.
You know, I have a bumper sticker on my farm truck. You know what it says? I have a couple of them. I can't repeat
one?
Two of them.
You just have one?
I can't repeat a couple of them.
Okay.
The one that I have that people like says, I farm, you eat.
I've got one of those, too, on my service truck.
So that's, on your service truck. That should be on the back windshield of that car with all the 452 dirty hats in the back of the window. I mean, you know you can put those hats in a dishwasher.
You know, it depends upon where I go, which one I want to.
The cow will be happy in Pioneer, a few of those people.
Yeah.
If you'd wash those hats, they'd be ecstatic.
Hey, I did wash the car this week, though.
You washed that car?
I washed the car.
God love you. That's a good thing.
Now when you get out of your truck next to my car, you might not get dirty.
Well,
I tell you, as dry as it was up home, it was very dusty.
I don't know why, but I like that red vehicle you drive better than the other one.
That's probably because it's a Ford.
It's a Ford?
Yeah. It's a good Ford. It's a good one.
You know what it
stands for? But my wife rarely lets me.
You know what Ford stands for, don't you? No, not that. Senator from the 8th. I'm going to call a point of order because the Senator from the 8th yelled something out. First on race day.
Yeah.
First. See, I'll go slow so the Senator from Kansas City area in the 8th district can understand. First is for Ford. On is for O. R is for race is for R. And D is for day. First on race day.
I hope that's not what my wife uses it for, but, you know, she very rarely lets me bring it to Jeff City. She does like it.
I have a lot of respect for your wife, and like me and many others, including the loud senator in the back row there, we all married up.
That's true.
All right, Senator, I just want to see what your rainfall was, and I appreciate you keeping us updated this week on that.
You know, I was down in Louisiana, and they had rain for about a month. And they actually said that if they get one more rain within the next week, they won't even have to irrigate this year.
Louisiana's only about 50 miles south of you. Oh, the
that
other Louisiana.
That Louisiana is. Yeah, no, see. I was down in where they grow a lot of rice.
The two-star general from the Air Force, he laughed there because he knew what that meant when I said that.
Yeah, all right. Well, I know where Louisiana is, too, because it's
in
my district.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Introduction of bills. Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send the bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 6, introduced by Senator Dixon, an act relating to the preemption of political subdivision authority regarding abortion with an emergency clause.
Introduction of bills. Our Senator from Green, do you care to explain your bill?
No explanation necessary. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Order of business announcements. Senator from Cole. Senator from Barry, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to make an announcement. Mr. President, your Committee on Seniors, Families, and Children, on the 13th of June, tomorrow morning, after recess, will meet about an hour after recess in the morning. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator from Cole.
I have an announcement, Mr. President. Just for the benefit of the body, we will be convening as a full Senate at 10 a.m. sharp.
Senator from Cole.
And the committee will meet at tomorrow morning. I'll have a recess motion to go into sometime in the afternoon, and that is so we can receive the bill in from the committee, just so members understand the plan for tomorrow.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules are 0100 tomorrow.
The Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand adjourned under the rules. All in favor say aye. Opposed? The ayes have it.